Good morning, everybody. We call our meeting to order. It is a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Cantonese Minister Andy Ho with the Dallas Chinese Bible Church. Mr. Ho was born and raised in Hong Kong and obtained degrees of engineering and architecture from the University of Texas at Austin. After graduating from college, he came to Dallas and worked as an architect. Later discovered his passion for the ministry and joined the Dallas Theological Seminary and obtained a master's degree in theology. In addition to the ministries at DCBC, Mr. Ho also volunteers as a corporate chaplain through Marketplace Ministries. He's happily married and they have three lovely daughters. Mr. Ho, thank you for being with us. Please rise for the invocation.
Establishment of government authorities. For there is no authority except that which you have established. So help us today. As we may face difficult decisions today, may your wisdom and guidance shine upon us. The hardship in the economy may frighten us, but there is nothing comparing to your eternal glory. Bring us the courage. Help this council to make decisions that will reflect your love, justice, and holiness. Lead with integrity, live with compassion, act with justice. Forgive us if we have offended you today. Forgive our pride when we seek our independence away from you. May your grace and mercy be with us. Bless this council and this city. Protect us from any temptation. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Ms. Atkins, would you like to lead the pledge? Pastor, again, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. Tomorrow marks the 40th anniversary birthday, and I wanted to invite everyone, first of all, to attend the Earth Fest in downtown Dallas Mall. That's from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Each year we've had a terrific time. Last year we were rained on, so it was clearly a focus on the Earth. Tomorrow hopefully will be a little bit nicer weather, but it's a great get-together. In the spirit of Earth Day, I also want to talk about some of the opportunities that there are for the innovative things that are taking place here in the city of Dallas related to the environment. Let me start by asking our city staff to stand. These are the folks who every single day are working to make Dallas greener. There we go. You bet. Thank you very much. Now, each of these individuals represent a city department or project that focuses on sustainability and on our environment. I wanted you to be able to see the commitment Dallas is making daily to better our city and our planet. The city of Dallas is an environmental leader. And I want to give just a couple of examples of the accomplishments that we have to tout, thanks in part to the hard work of the people that you are looking at now. We appreciate all of your work. First of all, recycling. Recycling figures have quadrupled in the last 3 years, with over 40,000 tons that are being recycled just this year alone. In energy, Dallas consistently ranks within the top two renewable energy purchasers in the nation. Of course, we're all proud of the standards that we set for green buildings, being the first large city in the nation to develop and implement comprehensive green building standards. Unlike many urban areas, Dallas is also creating green space. Main Street Garden is an excellent example of that. It sits where a parking garage once stood, and the park is being built, I guess the best way to put it, is out of thin air now over the Woodall Rogers Freeway. While cities are scrambling to meet water needs of their citizens, our water needs are secured through the area of 2035-2040, thanks to the long-range planning that's already in place. We're also working to educate our residents about what they can do through our GreenDallas.net website and our Green Dallas Environmental Outreach Team. Now, not to mention an illegal landfill has been restored back to its natural beauty and habitat. It is now anchored by the largest urban hardwood forest in the nation, the 6,000-acre Great Trinity Forest. And all of this is part of the overall vision of the Trinity River Corridor Project, combining flood control with green space and recreation and returning a once forgotten river back to the prominent place that it deserves in our city and our region. It all goes to show that our city's commitment to smart growth, planning and urban development, sustainability, and our goal of being the greenest city in America. And I would also point out it provides enormous economic advantages by reducing costs for the city and also for our citizens. Now I'd like to call up Jill Jordan. Jill? And present to Jill this proclamation. How are you doing this morning, Jill?
Hi.
Terrific. I won't go all through all the pieces, but it does touch on the Green Dallas Initiative, which encourages both the public and the private sector to be involved in building a greener Dallas. I've also talked about, from the city's perspective, some of the things that are happening and some of the accomplishments and touches on those. Mr. Cadena, I believe, has a great example of people in the community who are doing their part to do Green Dallas. You may want to talk about that in just a moment, Sheffy. In fact, Sheffy, why don't you come up and I'm going to turn it over to you right now. And then, Jill, maybe you want to make a couple of remarks to close it. Sheffy?
Thank you. Well, I do, and it's really exciting what we are doing in Dallas, and we're doing it through our schools and our children, the same thing, in our gardens. And I would like to call, is Scott Peel? Where's Scott? Scott, you come on up.
Scott heads this up, and I'm sorry, Mayor, but I'm going to have to read some of this because it's got a lot on it. I know you don't, yours, but this has things on it we need to hear. Real School Gardens cultivates relationships with elementary schools, communities, and creative learning gardens, raise hope, spark ignitions, and connect children to nature. This is what's exciting. In North Texas alone, Real School Gardens supports more than 66 schools, ensuring that more than 40,000 children and over 2,300 educators have daily access to nature through school gardens. Real School Gardens has launched a new collaborator this year with the Dallas ISD Elementary Schools, their PTAs, and communities to install new outdoor classrooms to Victor H. Hexter Elementary School, Alex Sanger Elementary School, and Harry C. Withers Elementary School, and Robert E. Lee Elementary School. So, Real School Gardens shows a commitment to environment stewardship and teaches our children to love, appreciate, and respect the world they live in. And this is presented to you by the mayor and all of the city council. And Scott, we just appreciate all that you're doing for this city and for our children. So, if it's okay for Scott to say a few words and what's going on. And I wish we had Teresa O'Donnell up here, because she headed up one of them at Alex Sanger.
That's right.
One of the gardens. If you haven't seen these gardens and what the kids are doing, what they're doing is unreal. And they're fantastic. I wish my house looked as good. So you may want to say a few words.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you to Mayor Ledford and the Councilman Condane and the rest of the City Council for everything you do in terms of innovative education in the City of Dallas. And on behalf of the teachers and students we work with in Dallas and across the Metroplex, I would like to thank you for recognizing innovation in education to create a rigorous and relevant context, not only inside in the traditional classroom, but also outside in what hopefully in years to come will be considered a traditional classroom as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I just want to point out, I'm going to turn it over to Jill for a couple of comments. But to give you a feel for the number of different departments that are involved, it includes air quality, water, our green building programs, of course, the city operations facilities. That includes everything from alternative fuel fleets to the renewable energy purchase programs, the things that we're doing out at Love Field with the energy efficient aviation, all of those efforts. It includes Green Dallas Environmental Outreach Team. It includes sustainability team, recycling, of course, parks and green space, our trees, our city arborists, and our city forester, everything having to do with the Trinity, of course.
environmental management system coordinators, and then finally our event that we'll have tomorrow, and that's EarthFest, again from 10 to 1 downtown Dallas. So Jill, do you want to say a couple of comments?
Thank you. This is really exciting to see the great partnership that has evolved over time between you all on the City Council and the city staff, and you see representatives from all of the various departments. And then we've broadened out, and now we're involving citizens in this. And so it's a real team effort to turn our city around. And it's something that we should all be really proud of. Later today, I'm flying to Iowa, and I'm the keynote speaker tonight at an event, at their Earth Day event. And what I'm going to be talking about is the environmental work that we've been doing here at the City of Dallas. And so I want all of you to take the moment of being proud of what we're doing here together. So thank you very much on behalf of all the employees.
Colleagues, next on the agenda is a proclamation recognizing Child Abuse Prevention Month. Ms. Councilwoman Margolin, please. Good morning. The month of April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and I didn't want it to go unrecognized by the City of Dallas. Pauline Medrano and I have kind of teamed up on this because she is the chair of the City of Dallas Domestic Violence Task Force, and I have been involved for many years with Tex Protects, the Texas Association for the Protection of Children. I currently serve as vice chair of their advisory board. And so what I'd like to do is, I know that there are a number of you in the audience who have come here for this today, and I'd like you to come up and join us. You know who you are. Just come and stand with us while we present some figures. There also should be a very brief PowerPoint that you may have received, whoever is doing the PowerPoint. Thank you. So we'll introduce you all in just a minute. But what I wanted to do was set the context. And here are some shocking statistics. That last year in 2009, Dallas County received 19,420 reports to Child Protective Services. 5,862 children were confirmed as victims of abuse in Dallas County. 1,019 children were removed from their homes in Dallas County. 2,041 children live in foster care. And 29 children died last year in Dallas County as a result of abuse. I want the individuals here to just come and introduce yourselves, and then I'm going to say a few more words. So just say your name and your organization.
Good morning. My name is Madeline McClure, and I'm the Executive Founding Director of the Texas Association for the Protection of Children, and we've been delighted to have Ann Margolin as our Vice Chair since inception, so thank you, Ann.
Hi, I'm Linda Love. I'm a volunteer from the North Dallas Texas Democratic Women.
And I'm Steve Love, and I'm with her.
Well, but more than just being with her, Steve, those of you who have been in the lobby of City Hall lately may have seen a display, and Mr. Love was the creator of that. We do have a picture of it. It was up. Could we put it back? It is a very sad display. It is 29 pairs of shoes, representing the 29 children in Dallas County that died in 2009 as a result of child abuse. So that kind of makes it a little more concrete than it might be otherwise. So Ms. Medrano now is going to talk a little bit about things that can be done to minimize this incredible disaster of child abuse.
Thank you, Councilwoman. We all know that prevention is the key. What can each of us do? We can report. Only 1 in 10 children who have been abused ever make an outcry. You can be their voice. If you suspect child abuse, make a report by calling CPS at 1-800-252-5400. We can educate. The first step to preventing abuse is awareness and education. To schedule a free education event at a school, church, or any community group, contact PreventionIsKey.org. We can volunteer. The nonprofits who serve child abuse victims need your time and your talent to continue their mission. Contact Sherry Markey, Director of Volunteers for Dallas Children's Advocacy Center at 214-515-9045, extension 20, to volunteer. And I want to personally thank Councilman Margolin for her leadership in presenting this proclamation. So we have a proclamation recognizing Child Abuse Prevention Month, and I'll read some of it, and Ms. Medrano will read some of it. So, whereas child abuse and neglect affect the entire community, and finding solutions depends upon the involvement of citizens throughout the community, and whereas child abuse and neglect can cause children to have medical, psychological, emotional, and social problems, including drug and alcohol abuse and poor academic performance, significantly hindering school achievement. And whereas children who are abused and neglected are 53% more likely to be arrested as juveniles and 38% more likely to be arrested for a violent crime in adulthood. And whereas in 2009, 29 children in Dallas County and 280 in Texas, over 5 children a week, died from child abuse, an increase of 27% over 2008. And whereas in Dallas County, 5,826 children were confirmed victims of child abuse and neglect. And whereas child abuse and neglect costs our state approximately $6 billion a year, or $88,000 per abused child, and costs Dallas County $512 million per year. Whereas effective child abuse prevention programs succeed because of partnerships created among federal, state, and local officials, medical and social service agencies, nonprofits, private foundations, school, religious organizations, law enforcement, government agencies, and business community, volunteers, and family, and whereas all citizens should become more aware of the devastation of child abuse and support parents and caregivers to raise children in a safe and nurturing environment. Now, therefore, Ann Margolin and Pauline Medrano, representing the mayor, Tom Blevard, and on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim April 2010 as Child Abuse Prevention Month. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for coming to represent the many volunteers and professionals who do so much in this field, and we're all aware that there is so much more to do. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. And to you and Pauline, a big thank you. Child abuse is one of those things I think all shake our heads at and just can't understand. And as you pointed out, education awareness goes a long ways. Clearly there's other elements when our law enforcement, of course, get involved in it. But your efforts are very much appreciated. It is an issue that, again, good communities deal with. Appreciate it. Our next presentation is going to be from Carolyn Daines. Carolyn?
Thank you, Mayor Leffert. I would like to have Jill to come up. Lieutenant Executive Director, and the team for Rebuilding Together Greater Dallas. I met Jill about 3 years ago while I was here the Dallas City Council, and she came to my office to talk about their organization. And I have been quite impressed since then. Jill has done a lot of work in the South Dallas Fair Park area in her team, rebuilding together of Greater Dallas. Jill, I want to thank you. There was a individual who lived in my district, and his house was in really bad shape, and it was in such bad shape that you could see the stars. And Jill came in, and her team, they rebuilt his whole house. I really want to thank you for that. It took me about a year. I told him to don't give up. We will find someone to help out at his house. Not only that, you came in with the Dallas Mavericks, who now will be a part of District 7, and Bear Street and the team. And you guys did about 8 houses and the Bear Street area. But you've just been all around. You've also worked in the Dolphin Heights with Anna Hill Neighborhood Association, and I want to thank you for all of that. So I would like to do a special recognition to Councilmember Carolyn R. Davis, present a special recognition to you, Jill, as the Executive Director and the team of Rebuilding Together, Greater Dallas, and recognizing the outstanding service of bringing volunteers and community together to rebuild the lives of Dallas neighborhoods. And I'd like to present you with some red roses.
I just want to thank Councilmember Davis for her incredible support as we've worked in her district. We're currently working on 15 homes in Dolphin Heights right now, and she's been unbelievably supportive of all of the work that we've done, and to all of the city council members who have allowed us to work in your district and to assist you in impacting your residents. So thank you so much for the opportunity to partner with the city and for allowing us to do the work that we're passionate about.
Thank you very much, Ms. Davis. Next will be Ms. Hasso and Deputy Pro Tem, Mr. Caraway. Mayor.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay.
He has the power.
He has the power to promote you. Okay. What's up? All right.
Let me just first say, one, when it comes to our Dallas Fire Department, and Chief Campbell, if all of you all would come up first, the fantastic brothers and sisters and all of our firemen in blue, Chief Burns, there are certain companies, and when I was in school, there was this company called Aaron that I would rent furniture from, and when I got out of college, I'd have to get into my apartment and I'd go over and find Aaron's rent, and I'd rent everything from Aaron. When you look at the fact that our fire department and our public safety, when those men and women are there, there are certain amenities that they need to have. We all know they do a lot of cooking, and they need refrigerators and all types of furnishings in the fire department. But then when you have people like Aaron Inc. to step up to the plate to assist us and to make the accommodations for the folks that put themselves on the line every day first for the citizens of this city, we must take this time to pause and recognize those that have dedicated themselves through their commitment and shown it that they are with us. So that's what we want to do. We want to get some folks up here with us if we can at this time. Jeremy Dunn, the general manager, and Amy Anderson, divisional coordinator. Are you two here? Let me get an Aaron's ring. There it is. I need a shirt.
That's right. Well, we are here today to give you special recognition. During the week of March 28th, Aaron's Inc. extended their generosity to several companies and nonprofit organizations throughout the city of Dallas for Aaron's Outreach Day. Y'all remember that, March 28th. Through their unique insight in giving nature, Aaron's has specifically recognized the need within our public safety sector, and Aaron's Inc. was determined to improve the work environment for the members of the Dallas Fire Rescue Department assigned to the Bureau of Homeland Security. Aaron's donation of refrigerators, tables, chairs, and many other items has enhanced the capability of the Dallas Fire Rescue Department to serve the citizens of the City of Dallas. Over 1,900 members of the Dallas Fire Rescue Department are both humbled and honored by the Aaron's family's caring and service to individuals that have made a positive impact in the City of Dallas. Now, therefore, Tom Leppard, the Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition to Aaron's Inc. in appreciation of their generous donation.
All right. Thank you. We'll let Chief Campbell come up and then give his special words.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. I'd like to thank Aaron's because you brought smiles to the firefighters' faces. We work and live in their fire stations every day, serving the great citizens of Dallas. And to see the smiles on their faces where they saw the new chairs, the new refrigerators, and to see everybody there, you spent a whole day there with us, spent multiple days coming and looking at what we needed, and we were picked from our Adopt-A-Station program. You looked at the Fire Dispatch Center, looked at what we do day in and day out. Sometimes there's a little space we need to get a little break after some hectic days, and you provide that for us. So on behalf of our men and women of Dallas Fire and Rescue, Fire Communications, we thank you, we're humbled, and we look forward to serving the citizens of Dallas and hopefully partnering again with Aaron's.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks. Sure. Just want to say it was a privilege to be able to come out to Dallas Fire Rescue and do this and give back to the people here, the men and women that serve our communities, and amazing group of women and men that do everything they do down there. So thank you so much for this. Very, very much appreciate it. Thank you.
The final presentation is really a recognition as to a group that unfortunately many times gets overlooked, and they're a very important part not only of our city, but businesses literally across our community and across our nation. Since 1952, administrative professionals have been honored for their valuable contributions to both businesses and government. Today, there are more than 4.1 million secretaries and administrative assistants working in the United States, according to the U.S. Department of Labor statistics. And there are 8.9 million people working in various administrative support roles across our nation. The City of Dallas very much values the work of all of our administrative professionals and would applaud every one of them for the dedication and their service to the city. These individuals present today have been selected by their department's director for exhibiting professional skills and personal attributes that speak to their high level of professionalism, customer service, and education to the City of Dallas. Mary?
I'm going to ask these folks to join us up front, please. Crystal Lee. Kelly Lewis. Bernice Espinoza. Marco Santos. Keisha Morris. Awita Miller Johnson. Kim Geary. Deborah Shelby Button. Como Rayo. Tanya Hicks. Amy Taylor. Patsy Rhodes. Vanna Caswell. Anitra Ramos. Janice Jameson. Maria Martinez. Karen Plunkett. Joy White. Kathy Johnson. And Lou Ann Brown Taylor. And I just want to take a moment to say thank you. Many of you I've worked with over the years, and I will tell you the phrase that I would apply to all of your work is, you got our backs, and there's nothing stronger or better than watching out for folks that you work with. You provide the customer service internally. It's very, very important. People wouldn't be able to do their jobs without your dedicated service, and many of you have been here long, long times, and I want to say thank you a lot for your effort, and keep up the good work. You're amazing folks. Thank you.
Mr. Atkins.
Mayor? Mayor left. Mayor left.
Why are you there? I don't see the other.
Excuse me, Donna. If I make a right. It's him. To all of the professionals who are standing there, thank you ever so much for what you do. We recognize that we get to be the face of the city, but you guys, including my own staff, Miss Glenda and Miss Judy, you folk break your back putting up a front for us. Thank you.
This side, Mr. Newman, Mr.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Medrano. We're sharing sides here to make sure there's equal time. Very clearly, you as professionals represent us as councilmen members, and you almost have more contact with our citizens and the very people that we're here for. So very sincerely, thank you. I saw Kim Gary back there. She's one of the very first people that I worked with when I was elected city council in the manager's office, and I was so sad to see you move on, but congratulations and thank you. Thank you all for your efforts on behalf of the city and the citizens.
Thank you, and have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Madam Secretary, can I go to you for our morning speakers?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We will begin your morning speakers with Rick Gonzalez, followed by Gary Deal. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer. The person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll see the timer on both screens. When the number turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You may address your comments to the chair, Mayor Leppert. Again, your first speaker is Rick Gonzalez. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
Rick Gonzalez, 4283 South Crest Haven. I have two documents on one sheet of paper that are being passed around. First, I would like to thank the staff of District 14. They've always been there for me. For the 13 years, I've been fighting crime in my part of Dallas. I've withstood guns, knives, sticks, bricks, bats, axe, clubs, generations of crime, racism, you can't imagine, but I withstood it, and I thank the support there from District 14, even though my council member refuses to acknowledge me. On the first page, I'm going to review this rap sheet. This is a house I've been fighting for 13 years. He's across the street from me. This is his possession, cocaine, intent to deliver, manufacturing, intent to deliver, manufacturing, intent to deliver, possession, possession, manufacturing, intent to deliver, possession again. Nobody should live with that across the street from their house, and nobody can imagine how much traffic that creates. During this, I've had meetings with police for 10 years. I've tried to create a relationship with the police department. They'll tell you, well, we've done some knocking talks over there. Well, that wasn't sufficient. Eventually, the city manager's office, I'm under the impression, got involved, and I appreciate the help for that. Meanwhile, I stare at the police department, which is the second half of my issue here. I wish I was here to thank the police department, but instead, the police department has destroyed my life. The NPO officer, Steve Fuentes, badge number 5817, he would be one that would tell you, oh, we've done some knocking talks over there. Well, while he was doing those knocking talks, he was calling my house. He was calling my house while I was out of town all night. He was screwing up my life, and yet I had, but when your bosses are your academy roommates, how do you fight that? How was I as a citizen, and Cato laughing about what Steve Fuentes did to me? Come over and laugh at me now, Cato, because that's wrong. It's wrong when you have the trust of every citizen in the city of Dallas.
If you continue going down that, I'm going to cut it off. Okay?
Well, sir, you stuck your hand in my face the last time I was here, so I expect that anyway.
You make it, but you've gone
wrong. I have the city charter. I have the rules of procedure. I have the Constitution. I have everything. In fact, you guys should have these documents that I have.
Continue.
But I do have them. And my point here is that I do have problems with the police department, sir. Can I not discuss that, or what are you telling me? I don't understand. I have phone records of somebody calling my house all night. His classmate in the academy or his bosses, they're laughing about it. Everybody thought it was funny. I'm not here to be laughed. I'm not here to be cut off. A police officer, when I met with Chief Kunkel, he told me that police officers do not live by chance. And there's no doubt that this was not by chance. It was by manipulation. The same way he manipulated a few of us to come up here and fight the NPO ICP change. These guys know what they're doing, and I respect the Dallas Police Department since I was a child. But when you start letting them in your house and they turn around and screw up your life, and yet nobody cares, the sergeant stutters when you bring up morals and ethics, the lieutenant thinks I got more issues, the deputy chief played a race card, and the police chief was laughing about it. What can I do about that? I've been to the police review board. Police review board didn't know what I was there for 15 minutes until they made me step outside and came back in and said, well, he didn't do nothing wrong. The man was using the city phone, was using city time, and screwing up my life, and we're going to sit here and worry about how I'm acting? I'm here to ask for help, you guys. There's a lot of issues in Northwest Dallas that we need help with. We need to step away from those council members for different reasons, and they need help. We need some support in Northwest Dallas. That's what I'm here for, Mayor. Not to be ugly, we need help. I've been through too much. I'm not here to fight you guys. The law is all I have to protect me.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker is Gary Deal, followed by Jay Robertson. Gary Deal, please state your name and address for the record, sir.
Sir, my name is Gary Deal. I reside at 2000 Highland Road in Dallas, the Primrose at Highland Meadows Senior Independent Living Complex. And the reason I'm here today is all of us residents who, and I have pictures to help support what I'm saying, behind Building 1, now this building was opened in 2006 as part of the Don Hill Potashnik scandal that was opened up. The city of Dallas owns the property adjacent to Building 1. The overgrowth of weeds and shrubbery is 8 to 12 feet high. It comes right up to the retaining wall. It is a serious fire hazard. Over the last 2 years, I have called code enforcement. No response. I have called my city council person's office. Her name is Angela Davis, I believe it is. I've had no response. Your assistant is not helpful at all. Wouldn't even let me get through to you. I have had the fire marshal out there. He said there's nothing we can do or they can do about it because it's owned by the city of Dallas and they do not police themselves. In this building, it has three floors. There are residents who live there, and a lot of them couldn't come today because they're frail and older. They're in wheelchairs on second and third floor. If there is a fire, the elevator will not work. These people will die or suffer from smoke inhalation. Some of these people are 500, 600, 700 pounds. There is no way anyone could carry them down the stairs. And so when I spoke with management, they said my last resort was to come before the city council and the mayor, and that's why I'm here. There's two other issues. There's a service road that goes into these high-powered lines. The trees are growing into those lines. TXU has maintained that. A fellow by the name of Michael from Code Enforcement said he was the manager, called me up yesterday afternoon, and said that they would be out and take care of it. They took care of it all right. They mowed the TXU property, which has been maintained, and nothing else was done. Then they called and said that Cascade Enterprises owned that land. Cascade does not. The contact at Cascade is John Jeter. There's also a problem with people who are going out on this road and throwing lots of trash and garbage. There's wet trash, I mean mounds of garbage out there. Nothing is taken care of. The snake problem. Snakes have gotten into Building 1, and on the news this morning on Channel 5, they showed how that there is a snake problem because of the weather, and the rats and whatnot from the creek to that building. We have coyotes and bobcats. I have personally witnessed bobcats eating people's dogs. And the coyotes that are out there, and coyotes are scavengers, I'm afraid they're going to get in the trash rooms. And so we're really asking the city of Dallas to take care of this problem, because it is their property, and get this stuff cut down and make it safe for this community. And I do have pictures here to support what I'm saying, if you'd like to have them.
Yeah. You know, I would appreciate having those. I was just informed that the property is 2000 Highland property. They have until Tuesday. We have sent the requisite information and notification to them. If they don't clear it by Tuesday, then we will go in and clean it up, and we will go ahead and build them.
I understand. Thank you, sir. But when I spoke to Michael yesterday from Code Enforcement, he had the wrong area. He's talking about where the old trailer park was. That's not the area. When you see these pictures, it's the area from the creek to the building. He's talking about the other side, sir.
Okay. Let's make sure that we've got the right area. I'm going to ask you, Ms. Davis is going to make a couple of comments. I'm going to ask you to step off to the side. I'll have Forrest meet with you. We want to clean up the same way that you do. My information was that we're addressing. Now, clearly we have to go through the notification, all of those steps. I've been told that we've done that. And again, they've got until Tuesday. If they don't, then we'll go clean it up and we'll bill them for it. And put it
I appreciate that.
But let's make sure that we've got the right area. So I'm going to have him get together with you kind of off on the side. Let's just make sure we're talking about the same thing. I think we are, but if we're not, we'll fix it. Ms. Davis?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Deere, you contacted our office, and I have the date you contacted our office, about growing, trees growing into the power line. Councilmember Davis' staff went to the location, Yolanda Davis, and she took pictures, and we have it. She showed me the pictures on PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. She put the pictures on PowerPoint, and she showed me the pictures the same day she came back. Also, we contacted Encore to assist and found no growing grass or weed on the power line. This is her Encore. We attempt to call you at 214-455-0418, but the number was not working at that particular time, okay?
That's the wrong number.
Okay. That's the number that we have on the system. The office of Councilmember Davis called and spoke with the manager of the apartment unit, okay? Her name is Ms. Sandra Ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She stated that the property concern that Mr. Dillard has, she has recently found out. She just recently found this out because she said no one had contacted her. I'm just saying what she told us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it does, in fact, belong to the apartment complex.
Okay, now let me stop you right there.
Let me finish.
Sure.
Okay? She said they themselves would take care of this problem. Then Code Compliance went out on the location to investigate any property that belongs to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they did mow the grass that belongs to the city of Dallas only. The apartment manager to the apartment unit will contact her corporate office to get this resolution resolved. Then it goes on to say she knew about this, but because of some concerns and money issues, they had to kind of redo their budget. That's what I have written
Okay. I have an update. No, it's not a debate. Just information for her. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your last speaker this morning is Jay Robertson. Jay Robertson. Not present. That concludes your speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Thank you, Madam Secretary. All right, Council. We've concluded that if we can, let's go to our voting agenda item. And if I can get a motion for the approval of our minutes for April 7th. So moved. Second. All right. All in favor? Opposed? All right. Thank you. We will not do item number 3, so we're going to scratch it off. We're not going to go to the briefings. So now we'll go into our boards and commissions.
Thank you.
Madam Secretary.
Item number 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions and the evaluation and duties of board and commission members. For your consideration, individual nominees are to the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission is Tommy C. Goyne, nominated by Councilmember Natinsky. To the Park and Recreation Board, Gerald Worrell is nominated by Councilmember Cadane. To the Board of Adjustment alternate members, nominated by Councilmember Newman, is Matthew T. Mira. Also, to the Reinvestment Zone 3 Board, nominated as for chair position is Don Raines Jr. by Councilmember Newman. We will have a valid vote for the chair nomination to the Reinvestment Zone 16 Board. We have Ed Oakley, which is co-nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano and Councilmember Hasso, and Kathy Hewitt, nominated by Councilmember Newman. Mr. Mayor, if you'd like, we can go ahead and proceed with issuing the ballots.
Okay. I want to be clear about something. I had a nominee to a board maybe 6-7 months ago who was turned down by the city attorney's office because that person's wife, within 2 years prior, had had a contract to do work for the Audubon Center. So I'm not clear about what are the rules about someone who has a contract with the city being appointed to a city board or commission.
Ms. Margolin, we're pulling the files on that nominee, that appointee right now, so we can review the files and determine what the reasons were for the non-appointment.
Well, but that's something that we're about to vote on right now.
No, we're voting on the isn't the chairs of the board and commissions that we're voting on. Yes, we're not voting on any nominees at this point to become members. We're voting on individuals to become chairs. So the chairs are already members of the board, so we need to pull the paperwork in terms of determining the appointment.
So the issue you're raising, Ms. Lego, I don't think we're acting on it.
Okay, it's just that one of these individuals.
Nope.
Okay.
Fair question. We'll deal with that.
Thank you.
Ms. Hossel, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Just wanted to say that I've never wavered in my support for Ed Oakley. Pauline and I nominated him on April 9th. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to the ballot then.
Mr. Mayor, may we go ahead and proceed with the vote on Don Raines Jr. as chair?
Motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed?
This is for the chair appointment of Don Rain. All right, thank you.
Okay. But then we'll hold it. We'll hold it until we get the answer. The attorneys are addressing another issue, so let's just hold this for now. Let's go ahead. Ms. Kelly, Ms. Cadet. So let's kind of hold this right now, and we'll get the answer in just a moment. Let's fit on the rain. So let's finish the balloting right now, and then we'll come back. Okay.
point that Councilmember Margolin is bringing up, because really the question is not even to, I'm sorry, the question is really not even to why the appointee's name is there for chair, but really the question is a legal question as to why is a person that has a city contract allowed on a board and commission. And I'm sure there's probably a reason, because these tip boards are a little bit different. But that, I think that's more to the point as to why even explain to us.
Well,
why
that's
that
exactly
is.
My question. Given the fact that the person that I nominated for a board was turned down, who had a contract,
it's a legitimate question, and clearly it.
So if it's
it
if
should
it's
impact
it's
even
a
on the board,
then that may be
it.
Different.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So at this time, Mr. Mayor, you want to hold off on the appointment of Mr. Raines as chair of the board?
Yeah, we'll hold off on that.
Okay.
And then we'll also hold off on our third item. So we're going to come back to these after we go through the next briefing. We'll come back to them after the next briefing.
So we're not doing
that. So with that, Mary, why don't we go into the floodway system update, if we could, please.
Okay.
Good morning. We were going to review with you today an update on our floodway system study. But before we begin, I think we need to focus on a few points. First, the most basic function of government is protecting citizens' lives and property, and this issue very much is about protecting the citizens' lives and properties. Second point that I'd like for you to remember, I'm sorry, council members,
Mr. Salazar and Ms. Madrona, Deputy Mayor Madrona, and
Mr. Lemington,
they all have conflicts. Right. Let the record be shown. Don't go far. Yeah, you can have conflict. All right.
As we go through this presentation, there's some points that I want us to keep uppermost in our mind. One, that we are committed to protecting our citizens and their property. Very important. It's our basic government's most basic function, and this particular item revolves largely around that function. Number two, we need to resolve these levy issues before FEMA does remapping. So that's one of our goals in driving this entire project. The resolution of these challenges, as we anticipate them today, does not further delay the Trinity River project. It's not on the critical path. And I would further add that we would be dealing with these issues whether there was a Trinity River project or not. So this is an important thing to remember. The briefing also is an in-progress report. The work on this is not complete, but because it is so critical that we protect citizens' lives and property, as we've moved along and working in cooperation with the Corps, we've gotten to a point where we believe we can begin some parallel work on these levies to assure that our citizens and their property are properly protected. You've seen the outline. We'll go straight over to the briefing review. Again, flood protection is of critical importance to us. Flood protection is a linchpin of this entire project. You'll see through this presentation and many occurrences, we acknowledge some of these concerns and issues as we began the Trinity River project, and that project was designed to resolve some of these issues. The floodway system, the Dallas floodway system, protects $7 billion worth of our property value, which is about 10% of our taxable base. So it's an important component of our city and our value of our city. And until this periodic inspection report number 9, the system had for years received good, very good, or excellent ratings on the annual and the periodic inspections, and our levees still meet the standards to which they were designed by the Corps in the 1950s. After Hurricane Katrina, the Corps created a national levee safety program, which was more rigorous and in some ways nationally more uniform than their inspection programs had been before. The Dallas levee system was one of the first ones to be inspected, one of the first major cities to be inspected. Since that time, there have been lots of inspections, and over 200 of those U.S. levees inspections, the levees have failed the inspection. So there are lots of other cities that are experiencing the same difficulty we are, so this is not a particularly local problem. And in many ways, we are at an advantage of some of these other cities in that we are in a partnership with the Corps, supported by a word or action on this project. Some of the other cities and the local entities that own these levees and these dams are faced with dealing with this on their own without the participation and partnership of the federal government. Under the new inspection criteria, this report was issued in March of 2009, and the levee system was rated unacceptable. And those ratings were based on visual inspection and engineering judgment, and there were two types of deficiencies identified, the operating and maintenance deficiencies and system-wide deficiencies. And if you remember on the operating and maintenance, the minute that we had word from the Corps that this was going to be issued, we began working on these, and also you included money in the budget that will have to be a continuing expense to address these operating and maintenance issues. As a part of our partnership with the Corps, in order to address the concerns in this report, we have expanded the EIS to include a study of these levee deficiencies, and this is referred to through the rest of this briefing as a system study. The EIS and the system study are basically interchangeable nomenclature. The system study is underway and is looking at system-wide deficiencies. We've completed in this process identifying the 100-year issues and some possible fixes. Again, we're working in cooperation with the Corps. The process is not complete. Actually, the system study won't be complete until the EIS study is complete in 3 years. But we do know that the Corps is supportive of the approach we're taking, and we're recommending we move along with this approach because it is critical to get these fixes in before the FEMA does remapping. The Corps will continue to look at the 800-year. This is just a map of the system, so you know what we're talking about. The pump stations are the red dots, the black lines are the levees, and you're familiar with that. That gives you kind of basis to look at. A little bit of history. The City of Dallas has long been working with the Trinity Corridor. We've looked at flood, transportation, recreation ever since the early 1900s. And in 1930, there was the initial river project was completed by the Dallas Flood Control District. It's actually the Dallas County Flood Control District. This is a quasi-governmental entity that's authorized by the state, and until reasonably recently, they were responsible and worked on the levees. In 1945, this became a federal program, and in the mid-50s to the early 60s, the Corps worked on the levee strengthening, basically brought the levees to what you see them today, and they were taken in the Federal Flood Protection Program, which offers lots of benefits to our citizens. And based on the 50s criteria of standard project flood, the 800-year flood, they protected for that. Now, in 1965, Congress authorized the floodway extension, authorized that. You recognize that our levees currently stop just past downtown, and really there's a large portion of our city for which there is not flood protection, and this became a critical issue, and they authorized that project. In 1968, we took over the ownership of the levee system from Dallas County Flood Control District. Basically, they didn't have a funding source, and it was a structure that no longer worked. It was sunset by the legislature, so the city assumed those responsibilities. During the 70s, we had a variety of bond initiatives related to the floodway extension and the Dallas floodway and the Trinity River that failed. One of them was very interesting. It was voted in the whole floodway in the early 70s. So, fascinating history when you look back. In 1989, the Trinity River flooded the Rochester area. It was over $15 million worth of damage in that area. It was people's homes. It was a lot of the city's property. There were over 500 vehicles parked out there that were ruined, and city offices and people's homes. Back up one, please. As a result of that, the voters really clearly understood what the issues were, and this was a levee that we believed the Corps would be responsible for. So we took the initiative. The voters approved a bond program for that to build that levee. That levee was built, and the Corps is reimbursing us almost completely to this point. But we built that on credit, as we're proposing in some of this proposition. And then in 1990, we joined the North Central Texas Council of Governments on a Trinity Commons vision study. We had the largest flood event in 1990, which was a 45-year flood event. And the city asked the Corps to relook at the 1965 DFE project. Basically, the Corps' design took out a lot of trees, was a huge wide swale. Nobody was really excited about it. So this initiative was taken on to have citizen input and the community involved in how we were going to address these decisions. Lots and lots of meetings, lots and lots of members, lots of input. And so it's important as this project progresses, and it is a long project, to remember that there has been much involvement from the very beginning, and it's still going on, in the decisions that are made in this project. During the mid to late 90s, there were construction activities along the levee. We realigned the channels and fattened the levee, Continental the Dart. In 1996, we formalized the partnership with the Corps for the Dallas Floodway Project with a feasibility study. That came before the EIS. And in 1998, the voters voted the Trinity River Corridor Project bond initiatives. And we think largely because, unlike previous bond initiatives, it looked at many components of this challenge in the way of flooding, in the way of transportation, in the way of recreation, in the way of economic development, and people found this solution to be more broadly appropriate to what we were doing. So we began the construction of the Lower Chain of Wetlands in 2002. That was part of the Floodway Extension Project. In 2004, the City Council adopted the Balanced Vision Plan, which was a little bit of replanting on the Trinity Corridor Project. And in 2007, a really important event occurred. The Water Resources Development Act, and you'll hear us refer to it as WRDA, authorized the Dallas Floodway Project, as described in the Balanced Vision Plan, as a core project. And so that was an important step for all of us. Now, in 2007, the Corps began some field work for PI number 9, for the periodic inspection number 9. In 2008, the end of 2008, the Corps released their annual report that said we had a rating of very good. At the same time, in any large organization, sometimes there are two things going on. At the same time, they were going back and looking at the periodic inspection information they'd done in 2007 and kind of upgrading it and tightening it up and making it to a higher level. So that in 2009, they released the 2007 periodic inspection number 9 and resulted in our levees having an unacceptable rating. So, and as you know, it was fairly startling to have one in December and another in 2009, but nonetheless. There were two categories of deficiencies, the operations and maintenance side. Those responsibilities are the cities. They've always been the cities. And the system deficiencies, which are a core and city responsibility because of the relationship we've had over the many years. Now, the unacceptable ratings mean that the city has to do O&M work, and we've talked about this before. We are doing it. We included additional money for O&M work in our budget this past year. This will have to continue. It also said the city has to have a comprehensive levee analysis as part of a system study. You remember that the original inspection was done on engineering judgment and visual inspection, so we need to look at it completely. And that we have to make the repairs to these levees if necessary in order to meet the FEMA standards. On the operating and maintenance side, I'll go through this really quickly. As soon as we knew that there might be this report issued, we started working on that immediately, even before the report came out. We developed a plan to address those issues, erosion, siltation, vegetation. It's called the Maintenance Deficiency Correction Period Plan, MDCP. And the Corps approved that last summer, and we began working on that. It addressed the O&M plans from the periodic inspection number 9. And our plan was to complete 149 of those deficiencies by March 31st of this year. And the additional ones we knew would take a little longer, to December of the end of this year, 2010. And then the other thing that this approval of the Corps did was continue the eligibility of the Public Law 8499 through March 31st of 2010 of this year. This is important because this provides us federal rehabilitation assistance should anything happen to these levees in an event during this period of time, so it's really critical. We successfully completed 122 of the 149 items as of March 31st, as you remember. We issue monthly progress reports to the Corps, and there's some examples of the work on the following pages. The completion of this significant portion of this, the Corps deemed that we were making good efforts toward this and renewed the PL 84099. Again, it's very, very important. This will have to be reviewed on an annual basis. This enables us to keep that particular protection support to our citizens, and we'll go stuff. You can read these and look at these. These are just examples of the maintenance. There are some remaining items on the operating and maintenance side, and one of them that's a huge discussion is the trees. The trees need to be removed for flood fighting and maintenance access. But we're having a discussion about how far from the toe of the levee these trees should be. This topic is under discussion still, the Corps has a variety of standards around the country for this, and we're trying to assess what most best works for Dallas. This is a concern because there's about 5,000 trees. Some of them are on private property. So that we have to have, this is a serious discussion, ongoing discussion. It's not resolved yet. The dark bridge erosion will be finished by the end of May, and then we have multiple levee crossings by utilities, and they'll have to be completed at that time too, and some other work to be done in July. So that's basically what's left on the operating and maintenance side. Now, the system study is longer term, broader, requires a little more in-depth work. The inspection report said that we need to address levee height and slope stability. Now, both of these issues have, from the very beginning, been part of the Trinity River Corridor project. We always knew we were going to have to work on this. The issue that was identified that had not been called out necessarily before was the seepage issue. Now, seepage is, and we have some illustrations a little further on, but seepage is could happen if there's sand that connects from the water on the riverside and seeps through under the levee. So basically, you'll see that illustration in a minute. It could occur. All of these issues were included in the scope of the EIS/system study as we were looking as we moved forward to look at the floodway. Now, what the system study was designed to do was identify what we needed to restore to the levees to the 800-year flood protection, and also to complete the Corps' approval process for the balanced vision plan, and to provide information about whether we could pass the 100-year standard. And if we did not, we had to be sure that we could fix those before FEMA remapping occurred. Also, the one other thing we wanted to be sure that anything we did on the 100-year became a platform for the 800-year. It's a long, complex study, multiple analysis and tasks. The Corps is responsible for most of it, but as you know before, in order to keep this project moving and to protect our citizens and provide us the opportunity to provide that protection, we volunteered to assist the Corps with the initial task or future credit. And so we hired HNTB to work with us on the geotech sampling and analysis, the problem identification, recommendations with solutions to the Corps, and this was called the levee remediation plan. Now, this is how it works. You'd have soil borings for levee analysis. From these, you would obtain ability to identify the problems based on that analysis. Then you develop a plan to address the problems. Now, that's where we are at this point in time. Whoa, guys. That's where we are at this point in time. And what we want to do at this point in time is we have enough information to begin to know what the issues are and how we can address them. So rather than wait till somebody stamps an official you're through stamp on this 3 years from now, we're recommending that we begin the solutions to these so that we can proceed the FEMA remapping. So after the levee remediation plan and we begin the 100-year fixes, the system study will incorporate all of the levee fixes, and then the city and the Corps can work together on the 800-year fixes and the balanced vision plan. Where we are right now is the geotech sampling is substantially complete. Somewhere near 1,000 new samples were done, but there are over 3,500 samples that have been done historically in this area. Lots of bridges, lots of utilities, lots of work has gone on in this area, so there's been lots of sampling in this area. Initial problem identification is complete. All the way through this, I will tell you, there will be some refinement. We have a broad general view of what the issues are, what the solutions need to be, and what the costs need to be. We'll keep you informed as we go along, but we think we need to start working on these things immediately. And the levee remediation plan is ongoing, too. We're going to try to do things concurrently here. And the problem identification, based on the Corps' current standards, the study's data shows that the levees may have under-seepage instability issues for both the 100-year and the 800-year flood. Now, the 100-year flood is the one that has a 1% chance of happening each year. The 800-year flood is the one that has 1/8% of a chance of happening each year. So, technical definition there. The 800-year fixes can be incorporated as part of the Trinity River Corridor project. We always anticipated that, and so that will go on from there. But today we're talking about largely the 100-year issues. We want to get these done before FEMA finishes the remapping process, and most of the rest of this briefing is focused on those 100-year fixes. So the problems, again, under seepage related to the east and west levees and seepage around utilities and through the levees. We have a lot of utilities that go through the levees. And the riverside slope stability in a limited section of the west levee. And there's a map that follows. Okay, these are examples of kind of a graphic example of what seepage is. And it's sand pockets in the ground above the bedrock that may connect under the levees and would cause seepage of the levees, and that's an illustration of that. Levee slope failure, you're familiar with. They're basically slides, and so if the levee slope is very steep and we're going from a 3-to-1 to a 4-to-1, you may have these slides. That's an illustration of those slides. And this is the problem area identification. The black lines are the levees. The red lines are where there may be seepage issues, and the green lines are the slope stability issues. And you can see, I'm pointing the wrong way here. Okay, that doesn't work, so we'll just... again, these are high-level looks at this. They'll need to be more detailed, but what we want to do is do that work and begin designing as we have the exact information and then move forward. We hope in the fall we'll have approval with the Corps to begin construction. So I'm just telling you this will begin in stages and sections as we move forward so we can do this as quickly as we can. Solutions. The solutions for these problems are levee cutoff walls for the seepage issues, for the stability issues, it's levee fattening and levee drains on the backside of the levees. And for seepage along utility crossings, it's probably levee cutoff walls again. So, and these are the recommended fixes, and you can see them again. The blue is the stability. Red is the seepage. Go ahead. These are illustrations of the various solutions. This is a cutoff wall. Cutoff walls have a huge advantage to some other solutions because they're minimal maintenance and they've got a lifespan of about 50 years. So if you do these, you're not repairing and fixing them a lot. The levee fattening addresses the slope and slides issues. And just, it's basically making the slope of the levee more gentle. And then the drains are on the backside to keep water from pooling at the toe of the levee on the backside. What we are proposing is to start designs on these solutions as soon as we have detailed information and we can specify the problem, how long the reach of the problem is, and begin designs at stages. We hope that in November of 2010 we'll have the Corps' approval to begin construction. Now, we're not sitting in one corner and working and the Corps sitting in another corner and working and then, you know, in the fall hand them a plan that they're going to look to and say, approve or not approve. We're working hand in hand, and so if there are problems arising as we begin to develop these solutions, I don't think there'll be any surprises in November. We'll know whether we have that approval before we get there. We're just going to keep working together on this. And again, our goal is to complete construction of these repairs for the 100-year flood protection by August 2011 before the FEMA completes their remapping process, and we'll go into that in a little more detail. The levee system was most recently accredited by FEMA in 2007, and basically this means that the properties behind the levees are protected from the 100-year floods. It also means that they are not required to buy insurance, flood insurance that they would have to buy if they're not protected, particularly if they have property that is got a federally backed mortgage or has federal money involved in it. As a part of this inspection report number 9, the Corps withdrew their letter of support for the FEMA levee accreditation, and because they questioned whether levees could contain a 100-year flood based on their current design data. Now, as a result of this withdrawal of support in April of 2009, FEMA began the process of remapping, and eventually how that works is they would draw the map such that the levees were not even there. And this is a preliminary schedule, and again, so many things can change this schedule. This is our best guess right now. Preliminary revisions of the current maps. FEMA has existing maps, so their preliminary revisions will be prepared and released to the community for public comment this September. And this is a time when the citizens could look at it and say, why did you do this? This doesn't look right to me. I think my land's high, or I think this is low. And FEMA will investigate those comments and concerns. And then when they get through the comment period and they've investigated all the comments and concerns, revised flood maps will be released in August of 2011. Again, that's an estimate. It's hard to tell how many comments you would have. It's hard to tell how much investigation would be going on, but they're going to take their time to get that done correctly. So the best estimation is those revised flood maps would be released in August of 2011, and the final maps will be in place in February of 2012. Now, that means that flood inspection would be required for a federally backed mortgage, and it would be constrained development in the remapped area. That's basically what it means. This is a worst-case scenario draft. If you didn't have the levees, what the flood area would be. And again, this is not official FEMA mapping. It's not even official City of Dallas mapping. It gives you an idea of the area we're talking about. And it's pretty critical and pretty important to our community. In order to prevent this remapping, we've got to complete these levee repairs by August 2011. We also have to submit, as a part of that process, flood certification information on the floodways and the levees by August. Now, as a part of this process, when FEMA's redrawing this map, they're not just looking at what the levees are doing, they're also looking at the interior drainage. And you remember that the city can flood two ways. The river can rise and you can overtop or breach a levee, or all the creeks and streams that drain down to the river that we pump over into the river with sumps and the pumps, that could flood. So you've got two kinds of flooding here. And so when we give information to FEMA, we're going to have to give information on what we think the levees are doing and what we've done to fix those, and what we're working on interior drainage. So keep that in mind as we go along here. Okay, in the 2006 bond program, we had significant money for interior drainage. And some of those projects include Pavajo and Baker pump stations. Both of these are fully funded. In fact, we're advertising today for, this was Pavajo, right? For Pavajo. These two pump stations are the one that impact the biggest areas. Pavajo on the west side, Baker on the east side, lower in the design district. They're fully funded. We'll begin construction this summer and winter, and it will be completed in 2012. That will take a large portion of West Dallas and the design district out of the floodplain area. This information will have to be provided to FEMA. Two kinds of flooding, two kinds of information. The Able pump station, this design is fully funded, and it's 35% complete. The completion of this project will require additional money in a future bond program. Now, I had somebody say, well, yeah, that's because y'all took the money last time when you were doing this. It's not entirely true. The 2006 bond program looked at interior drainage projects and projected cost. In many cases, in many of those projects, that bond program is not enough to finish those projects. And this is not an unusual thing. You know, we will put money in for land and design of a new library and then construction in the next bond program. So in many of these cases, the project would be able to be designed and maybe whatever land was purchased, but then that would have to be set on the shelf to the next bond program. So basically what we're doing in this, as we suggest some funding sources, is looking at this money and saying, is it better to do the design, the land acquisition, and set that on the shelf till the next bond program, or is it better to take that money and use it for flood control that we can do right now and fix those levees? So that's basically the decision you're looking at. Able pump station is one of those that the bond program did not have enough money to complete. We thought it did. It did not. This is very expensive. When you get into looking at these things, there's lots of capacity issues and technical issues that sometimes, the more you study, the more you figure out about how to do this. Flooding is a complex engineering problem, to say the least. 35% design is complete for the four remaining pump stations. And again, this is going to have to be in a future bond program. We always knew it was going to have to be in a future bond program. To tell you the truth, there's probably over $1 billion worth of work in this community in interior drainage that's going to have to be done over the next three or four bond programs. And I know it's not sexy or fun, as much fun as a rec center or a park, but it really needs to be done. So we'll be working on that as we move forward. So FEMA's remapping of the Pavajo and Baker pump stations will have to be coordinated with the city's construction projects. And what we don't know is, you know, if we're 90% through with this, will they say, well, we know you're going to finish, but we won't include that. We don't know how that will work. But we are doing work in the interior on interior drainage during this period that will help that remapping too. But some of the pumps and sump areas will still be remapped. So there will be some people that are currently not showing up on a floodplain map that will before this is all over. But when the work is done on these, that will get them out of the floodplain. And the ramifications of remapping we've talked about repeatedly. There are existing structures within the remapped areas. If they have federally backed mortgages or various kinds of insurance, we'll have to take care of flood insurance. It is expensive. And no building permits can be issued unless it's on fill or the building's elevated. Now, we think that we need some ordinance changes pretty quickly to address some of these issues that folks in those areas will be facing. And two of them we're going to bring to you in the middle of May, that final inspections and COs will not be withheld because of a floodplain designation if the building permit was obtained prior to the new effective maps. And the second one is we want to have a expedited fill process with a reduced fee. So we'll bring those back to you, because right now we have 6 to 8 fill processes, and we charge $6,000 within about $1,000. So we'll bring those back to you in May, but we think we need to address some of those challenges that folks in these areas are facing. Also, this is a complex, it's a lot of money, it's a hard thing to think about, it's scary, it has a wide impact. We think it's important that we begin the communication process immediately. We're going to talk to folks, business leaders, community leaders in the area, get some feedback on them on how we should do this communication process, and then we're going to start, as soon as we can, citywide communication on this issue, and we'll be talking to you about that too, as how to handle that in your district if it's necessary. Luckily, but this issue, as I said before, is not a Dallas issue alone. This is a national issue. And as more of these inspections occurred and more of the failures have come up, folks across the country are bringing it to the attention of Congress. And we have joined a National Levee Issues Alliance organization, working with Trinity Commons on this, and looking at various approaches in legislation that we can address this. Lots of states have joined us. You can see those lists. I think others will as people become more and more aware. And Congress, as I speak, is having a hearing on a bill that suggests that FEMA not do remapping if a particular entity is working in good faith on fixing the problem. You know, give it a certain period of time, give it 5 years, 7 years. Certain conditions exist if you have an exit strategy for if there is flooding, and there's several conditions, but it looks at the fact, it realizes the impact of these what have been monumental changes really to this whole system that we're going to have to deal with. So you'll see us working on this as we move forward. It is a good thing that it's now become national attention. It's a little challenging for us because we don't know how that'll manifest itself, and we were one of the first. So if you're one of the first, you get to experiment. So but we think it's important that you have to respond and protect your citizens, and we'll deal with the national issues as we go forward, kind of simultaneously here. Cost and funding. From what we know now, we estimate these costs to be between $100 and $150 million. Again, until we do the in-depth analysis on the reach, the area that was looked at, we don't know how long, how thick, how big these will have to be. So that accounts for that range of prices. We're partnering with the Corps to work and make sure that our 100-year solutions provide the platform for the 800-year. They have to be integral to the 800-year solutions, because if that's the case, and we were going to do them for the 800-year in partnership with the Corps, some of our costs can be credited to us in the future. So that's an important thing to be sure we're doing. So our funding strategies are in basically this high level: reallocation of drainage bond funds as we can minimize that impact, and it's most important. And repair expenses would be allocated to programs and projects that directly benefited from this. As I mentioned before, $334 million in the last bond program for this. Many of those projects are not able to be completed with this money. So, again, the question is, do you do the design, do you buy the land, set it aside, and wait till the next bond program, or do you make a decision, because you're going to have a bond program for this anyway, or do you make a decision that we spend that money right now to fix these levees? And so we've got to do some more analysis on what these projects are and which ones it makes the most sense to suggest that to you for, but that would be a large portion of this money, is reallocating some of this flood control money. And I will tell you again, for the next 2 to 3 bond programs, you're going to have a significant amount of money in it for these kind of projects. The Abel's pump station we talked about before, it was funded this bond program. We knew at the time we suggested this that we did not have money to complete this program, so we took some of that money to use for fixing the levees and for doing this study. There's $17 million available with that project, and I will tell you that's the only specific project right now I can tell you that we take money from. We'll have to come back to the Trinity Corridor Committee and talk to you about other individual projects. We need to do more analysis. Water utilities, we believe, can pay for part of the seepage related to their facilities. The central wastewater treatment plant is there. There's various water and wastewater conveyances through the levees and across the floodplain, so they can pay for part of that. It is a stormwater activity, so that can support some of that. And the parkway, the original cost estimates included some money for seepage issues related to protecting the parkway, so some of that money could be it would benefit that program, so we could use some of that money also. So this, again, high-level, rough look at where the funding would come from. We'll be back to you. If you are okay with this approach, we'll be back to you in the next few weeks because we need to move forward, but we need more specificity for you, and it's a good deal of work to get there. Next steps, we think the most important thing is to complete the design and construction of the 100-year flood protection solutions. That is absolutely critical, and we need to get it done in the time frame before the FEMA remapping. We're going to brief the Trinity Corridor Project Committee and Council action on those ordinance changes that we suggested in May. We want to launch the information campaign in May also, and beginning construction is just absolutely critical in November, pending Corps' approval. Again, I want to reiterate, the most important responsibility we all have is protecting our citizens and their property, and we have to get these levy challenges resolved before FEMA remaps. Again, we'd be doing this whether you had a Trinity Corridor River project or not, and it is not, from this point forward, causes no delay in this project. And again, the briefing you're looking at will change in detail, not in concept, as we go forward. So I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor. I look at this as a great information and communication to the public. There has been a whole lot of concern how we're going to finance the budget with the Trinity. Mary, you know, I guess my real concern is that if you go to back to page 50, I believe, talking about the remapping of FEMA, my concern is we probably have roughly maybe over $2 or $3 billion worth of commercial property along Riverfront Boulevard. This is a very important step because if we don't get this done before the remapping comes in, that those property owners probably have to get flood insurance, going to cause a very, very financial impact to their business. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. And our partners here with us today on that project, H&TB and the Corps, you're talking to me and telling me I've got to get this done. We're talking to them, too, and telling them they've got to get it done. This is absolutely critical.
Well, I'm talking to our property, you know, our property tax, you know, those businesses down there. So I think this is a very, very time conscious that we definitely need to move forward as a rapid pace. And Mayor and you and Dave of the Trinity Corridors Committee, we need to look at this as very important to our citizens, but also very important to our property tax, you know, basis, and make sure that we do this on a timely and as speedy as possible.
Yes.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mary. Mary, I have a couple questions I want to ask you. On page 27, I see the before and after pictures. How will we protect, you know, with the trees on the before, there's a lot of trees around, I guess this is what do they call these little pockets? And on the after pictures, will trees grow back over a long period of time back into the after pictures?
We have to keep that from happening.
Huh?
Yeah, they would if we let them, but we're not going to let them.
Okay. So is there a cost to that?
Yes, ma'am.
Long-term maintenance?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Do we have, or would there be a budget anywhere for looking at long-term maintenance after we finish this stuff?
You included in this year's budget additional money to do this maintenance. That is not a one-time expense. It will be an ongoing expense, and it will probably grow a bit over the next few years.
Okay. And you will let us see in this year's budget what that long-term expense will be?
I'll give you my best estimate. I can certainly tell you next year.
But it won't, not until, it won't be this year, but next year we can tell.
The budget, you've got money in this year's budget, and we're spending that and taking care of these things, as you can see.
Uh-huh.
That money is not a one-time fix. It'll have to go on. And you pointed out a really, really good example. Those trees will try to come back, and we cannot allow that to happen. So that maintenance is ongoing.
Okay. On page 34. You talk about you hired AT&TD. Are they a part of the 25.5 million, or did they do a separate contract with that?
No, that's their contract.
That's their contract to fix what we're asking them to fix.
To do the study, to do the borings, to do the analysis, and to do the design.
Okay. Do we have that anywhere? I would like to see that kind of broken out. If anybody were to ask any questions, it makes it's a little more clear now to me that this is what they're going to be doing.
Well, they spent, it cost us $13 million to do the soil borings and the testing,
mm-hmm.
about $1.3 million to do the analysis of the borings. The inspection is about $500,000. The response and the engineering design for the problems would be $8.99 million. Identification of the problems, about $1 million, and the certification, $500,000, and the remediation plan, $200,000.
And we can put that out somewhere.
Yes, ma'am, I will.
I think that'll help.
We'll send that to you all.
So people can kind of see
sure.
what they're doing for us. On page 35. And then looking at this system study, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Is there like a number one? What's the timeline? Are we going to add timelines to
this? We're about through with number one. The borings were about through. Number two, we're working, we've identified the problems from looking at those borings. They're, on 2 and 3, we need to do some more analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we can have a general idea and know what the solutions are. We need to go back and get the details in that. And you can see on number 4 is where we want to begin planning to fix the 100-year levees. And then the system study will continue to do in-depth analysis and be a part of the EIS, which is 3 years out.
And we can have an attachment page. I'm sorry. I just think the more we put out
we'll put a timeline on that and get to that, too,
I think
in our follow-up.
We can kind of resolve some of those questions.
Okay.
And then on page 47, you talk about the backside of the relief drainage. The backside of the drainage, where will the backside of the drainage go, in what community? Will it go
in? No, it'll go into the sumps and the pumps.
In the pump.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's what it's
going to
be.
We won't dump it on the neighborhood.
I just want to make sure, because the last one is on page 52, and I'm finished. Now, if we were to do nothing, you're saying if there was a 100-year flood, is this how it would look?
What this is if the levees weren't there, what it would look like.
Okay, then.
And if we don't get the levees repaired, this is a general overview and not specific. It's not terribly scientific, so FEMA wouldn't, this isn't a FEMA map,
mm-hmm.
But it gives you a general idea of the challenge we're facing if we don't get those levees fixed.
And then the pump station. Is there a pump station at Rochester Park?
Yes, that's not in this discussion, but there is one there.
Have that one been fixed? I think it has.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Jill, has it been completed?
Yeah.
Now, the pump station they're talking about on the Lamar end, is it a part of this?
Are you talking about Able, maybe?
Uh-huh. Is that the pump station
for
Able,
Lamar?
Is that the name of it for Lamar?
It's not.
Okay, but are we going to have one?
You have the levees.
Okay, but it's separate from this?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor. Well, I think you've done an excellent job, Manager, of explaining this, because I know it's a lot more complicated than that. And I like the fact that you gave us a little bit of history, and I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. It's an ongoing, it's been an ongoing issue for quite some time now. A couple of things, and I want to go back to this map. I think it was on 52, 54, somewhere in that. Yeah, that one. I still don't understand the worst case scenario, assuming no levee protection, assuming no additional levee protection in the types of fattening and so on and so forth that we're going to do, or assuming there's actually no levee there.
If FEMA remaps, they remap as if there were no levees. So,
okay.
So that's why you call it worst case, because you know, even if we didn't fix the levees, you know, according to what the Corps says needs fixing, there would still be some levee protection. But FEMA will remap as if there were no levees. So this is what the remap area sort of would look like. But you know that even if you didn't get the levees fixed, you wouldn't have this necessarily kind of flooding. You'd probably have regional flooding. It's important for people to know the possibilities.
Right.
I mean, I don't think you'd ever see this, but you'd see regional areas.
Okay. It's interesting. I'm interested in the sump, people who will have to pay flood insurance. And we've talked a little bit about business insurance, businesses perhaps having to pay more if we don't get it enacted very soon.
Businesses and homes.
Right. And I'm interested, and the reason I'm interested in the homeowners is because there's a lot of folks that wouldn't be able to afford the insurance. And so I noticed when you joined the group, the national group, that was addressed in case the remap didn't get done quickly enough. There was an issue with the sumps, which caused them to be out of compliance, and now they had to have homeowners insurance. So do we have some kind of action plan, or will we have some kind of action plan for those folks? Not necessarily that would be effective because we're going to get this all in before 2011, but those folks that might be affected because of the sump area and the remapping in that area. Maybe I have this wrong.
Well, we need to bring you back more detailed briefing on interior drainage and the sump and pump areas, and that would be a decision you would need to make. About whether, I mean, you certainly want to have a public information program. I will tell you that FEMA and most of us say if you live behind a levee, you need flood insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You are required, if your levee's not certified by FEMA or you know in the FEMA program, you're required to buy that if you have a federally backed mortgage or federal funding in your home. But again, if you owned a home free and clear, that's your decision.
Right.
So I think what we need to do for you all is bring you, which we are planning very shortly, to bring you back an interior drainage briefing that looks at it from that component, and you can see what the impact will be and what
federal programs there may be or may not be or may be coming up that we're going to want to join in on.
And again, the good news is it's not just a Dallas problem, and that we can play an active role and a leadership role at Congress talking about how this needs to be addressed across the nation. Because if this is a nationwide problem with levees and dams, there needs to be a nationwide solution to this because it's a huge impact.
Yeah, no, I realize that. A little bit about the flood wall. This might be a little bit technical, and so maybe we might have to get somebody else up here. But just out of curiosity, when you build a flood wall, and I can assume that you put in some piers or something first before you're going to actually put the wall in itself, can you give me an idea about how that occurs? Because it seems almost, you know, you have to drill down just like you would any column, put formwork in there and so on and so forth. But I'm just curious about just a little bit of the construction part of that.
I mean, Jill can tell you, but you basically described it very well. It goes down to bedrock, you build it and pour in the...
Put in forms.
Right.
And the reason I was thinking about that is because, you know, if it rains and so on and so forth,
that's one reason when we're working in the floodway, work stops. You know, you don't go mushing around down there when it's wet, and that's one of the challenges of working down there.
And the length of time that it would take you, actually, I assume you're doing this in the summer months, the length of time that it would take you to...
Well, we're going
to
do it in stages. So,
oh, okay.
I mean, we recognize that weather will be a challenge. We're hoping it'll be a nice,
okay,
dry
and
next
then,
year.
Right, and then to that point also, I mean, there's also additional challenges because if it starts to flood or something like that, there's additional challenges as well. The cost from water utilities, since there's drainage from all these streams, upstream we've got lots of water payers and so on and so forth. Since it's not the city of Dallas's floodway, mm-hmm. obviously, I mean, streams upstream continue to add to the issue as well. Walk me through just a little bit about how water utilities might pay for some of the cost of that, an additional fee on your water bill, but also, just one more thing to carry it one step forward, water utilities in other water districts that compound to the problem but are not Dallas water utility users?
Well, you're thinking more globally than we were thinking on that. We were very simplistically saying if we make capital improvements that benefit the facilities, that's all, just the facilities, that the facilities, the water facilities should pay for that. So our premise, I don't know that you can, this is provision of water, that's a little bit different from flooding. So what we're saying is if you have a water plant and it's got seepage issues and we need to build a wall by the water plant, the water should pay for it. Water utilities should pay for it. And with that, everybody that's a member of the water DW serves will be paying a part of that effectively.
Okay, so you did not mean that if there's a fee added onto the water utilities bill, they would be helping paying for the sumps and the levying of the levies?
Nope, we didn't.
And is that something you might consider in the future?
I'd have to think some more about it. I don't think those two problems are directly related in that sense.
Uh-huh. Right, I don't know. I'm just
The other thing is that when water, for instance, if we don't sell as much water one year as we thought we were going to, and we had capital projects planned, and we don't have enough money, we don't do those projects. I mean, that's how we keep the water budget balanced. So when the water brings you their budget forward, and we say how much impact this particular cost would have on their budget, if we don't do any increases, that means a project will be delayed till the next year, probably. So there's two ways to handle that. And we'll look at that in more depth as you look at the water budget.
Okay. Is the correct place then to obtain money for a project like this, or some of it, through the federal government and through the Corps because it is a regional project?
No, it's simply because in federal law, this is a core project, authorized core project, so they can partner with us. Others, if we were not in that partnership with the Corps, mm-hmm. too bad, you're on your own.
Really? Because it's very interesting that a lot of the problems that occur, obviously, are upstream in different communities, and that's kind of where I was getting to. And I don't know if that has been addressed in other states differently, perhaps, than the burden of the cost, even though the Corps is paying some of it, the burden of the cost really falling to the city. And could we do some research on that to see if there's another kind of idea out there that maybe somebody else used? Well, my idea or my thoughts are is that we proceed as expeditiously as possible. I think you've laid out an aggressive plan here. It's something that everybody realizes on the council, and those of us who've been on the Trinity Committee understand that it's something that needs to be moved forward very, very quickly because the number one concern for the Trinity is flood protection.
Right.
So I'm with you on that. I would encourage you to bring back numerous briefings as you will, and also to tell us how we're progressing as well.
Okay.
Thank
we'll
you, Mr.
That.
Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Hume, thank you for your presentation. It is clear that this matter is of the highest importance because you're giving this briefing. It is most unusual for the city manager herself to present the briefing, and that places a significant stamp of urgency on this project. I have some questions, but allow me to say on the front end that I understand and feel the urgency, and I completely support the plan you have put forward. I may repeat myself on the end for emphasis, but I want to say that on the front end so that you understand that I recognize the urgency and I fully support where you're going. because I anticipate I may have to answer questions in the district about this, I need to be able to say what you said on a few things, and I don't completely understand them. If we can go to slide 39. I need you to tell me again, a bit slower than what you said, what is seepage?
Where rivers run, there's usually sand. This river has run all over this country, for this part of the country, for hundreds of years. What the Corps is worried about is that above the bedrock in the soil is pockets of sand.
Water. Just a second. What is the bedrock?
The bedrock is the solid rock where you get down, no more dirt, you're at rock.
All right.
Okay. The dirt that is above that, if it's an area where a river has been and has run various different courses, there's usually sand. What the Corps is concerned about is pockets of sand or channels of sand through which water could seep. Water doesn't seep through clay quite like it does through sand. So you could have flooding on the river side of the levees, as you see in this illustration. The water could seep through that sand under the levee and come up on the other side. It's called a sand boil. I will tell you, we have not had any. But that's one of the things we'd be protecting against.
If the water seeped through that sand, the flooding would occur on the other side, on those homes on that other side.
There would be water.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have to have a recess for just a minute. You okay? You okay?
But it's because of a conflict that they left. They didn't just leave. It was a conflict. Yes.
We had a quorum before the conflict. If you lose your quorum because of a conflict, you can still proceed. Okay. Okay.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. The same thing on slide 40.
This is what we call a slide, and I know that you've seen pictures of these, and it has to do with the slope of the levee being too steep and getting wet and the dirt sliding away. And so to fix a slide, you would make that slope a little more level. I'll tell you one place you can see lots of slides right now is along I-30 on the way to Fort Worth. TxDOT's got lots of slides over there.
All right. When you have that steep slide, the result is what? Does the water rush over the levee?
No, the dirt will slide off the side of the levee, and you want a big, fat, thick levee, and some of the dirt slides off, and that compromises levee integrity if you don't fix it right away. We do have these. We know we have these. We fix them on a regular basis.
Okay.
Just something you have to keep an eye on. You can't leave it undone, unfixed.
On slide 45, Ms. Coop touched this, but I want to revisit it. What is that wall made from?
Cement, concrete.
And how does that help?
It's basically the water can't get through. If you assume there were sand seams or sand pockets that the water could seep through, that can't get through concrete.
It protects the
right.
levee
right.
from that seepage that we talked about
yeah.
earlier.
Blocks off the seepage.
All right. On slide 47, on what is my left-hand side on the slide that's in front of me, where it says gravel, filter sand, sump area,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean?
That is to have a place for the water to be drained off of so it didn't absorb into the toe of the levee. That would be a drain of sorts, so you don't have water standing and weakening that toe of the levee.
Where does it go?
We pump it into a sump.
Okay.
Or drain it into a sump.
I want to go to slide 65. Again, Ms. Koop addressed this, but I want it addressed in a way that I am very clear that I understand and can explain.
Okay.
65. That's not the one I want. I want the one that has the payment on it that says Dallas Water Utilities will pay X amount of dollars. It's that one. DWU, Dallas Water Utilities Funds.
Mm-hmm.
If Dallas Water Utilities has to pay up to $10 million, does that mean for the individual homeowner there will be an increase in their water bill?
It does not have to.
Okay.
You remember from last year's budget, we projected a water rate increase to do a certain number of projects that need to be done. If we did not want to increase the rate, one of those projects would be delayed. This is not a lot of money in the construction side of DWU, so that will be a decision that we will deal with as we deal with the budget going forward, but it doesn't have to mean that.
Right. You talked about, this is not a question now because you've already given me the answer, but I want to say this. Interior drainage and the sump pump situation. I don't fully understand what you're talking about, and so I can't fully explain it. I will be looking forward to a briefing so that I can understand and I can explain what that means. Do you have some idea when we may get that briefing?
I would ask you, we did include that illustration, didn't we? Can you all bring up the illustration? I think this one's worth talking about briefly right now. And just the illustration may help you. It's on page 81. Again, Dallas can flood two ways. The river can rise and the water can flow over the levees, or you can have a levee breach. But Dallas has got lots of creeks and streams that, when we weren't all here, all drained down to the river and down the river and to the Gulf. When we built levees to keep the river from coming out of its banks and flooding us, all the streams that ran down into the levee now run down behind the levees. The sumps are holding areas for that water. The pumps pump that water into the river. We call that interior drainage. And that's an illustration of it. There's creeks all through this area. They all drain down to the, and even the creeks that we have put into pipes underground have an outfall. They go into the Trinity River. So our interior drainage system for the entire city needs to be improved.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Hume. Again, let me repeat what I said at the beginning. As I indicated, I might. I understand the urgency. I want my constituents to understand the urgency and understand why we're talking about the kind of money we're talking about and spending it as quickly as we're talking about. This is absolutely necessary to proceed as expeditiously as possible. I fully support your plan. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hill. I'm Mr. Goldman.
Thank you very much for this very important presentation. There's no question in my mind that the protection of our citizens from flooding is absolutely paramount. And no matter how people feel about other aspects of the Trinity Project, to understand that this has nothing to do with that. I think that's really a critical piece of information, that this is about flooding and we've got to take care of it. Also the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers has decided since Katrina to tighten up their standards may be something that we're inclined to argue with a little bit, but we see what happened with Katrina, and so we are doubly obligated to make sure that nothing like that is possible to happen here. A few specific questions from the slides. On slide 8, the first bullet point, it says that the city and Corps expanded the scope of the current EIS to include the study of the levee deficiencies. I'm assuming that is the environmental impact study that is studying
the toll road, the lakes, the various and sundry other amenities. Okay, so we have just added this to that study.
And it is necessary that it be included because this can be the platform or an integral part of the solutions in that study.
Right. Okay. Now, a follow-up question to that. The HNTB study that we've gotten back that we're basing a lot of this on, was that a study to determine the 100-year fix only or the 800-year?
No, it was broader.
Okay. So that even though we're only acting right now on the 100, that study was also determining what's needed for 800. Okay. On slide 34, oh, okay. The very bottom, just a little point of confusion. I keep hearing the number as $29 million that the study
we
cost.
We forward additional money to the Corps to do some of their work in conjunction with this, too. So it is $29. H&DB got $25.
Is that the $4.75 million that we voted on recently?
Yes.
Okay. Slide 57, please. Okay, could you go over these two things in a little bit more depth, because these are things that you're going to be bringing back to us?
Yes, it will bring them back in more depth. The field process right now takes a good bit of time, and you have to file a $6,000 fee to participate in it. So we're suggesting you lower that fee and that we expedite that process on the bottom bullet.
So these are for businesses or homes, property
in those areas.
Those
potentially impacted areas.
Okay. I'm not clear about why you want to reduce the fee, but we can talk about
Because the fill would enable you to develop in that area, and we want to do everything we can to facilitate that development.
Okay.
So if you filled out of the floodplain, you could go ahead and do the development without the impact of the insurance. If you're not going to do the fill, you can't do that. So we want to make it easy for people to do this.
Okay. But we are also trying to get to the point where there is no adverse impact because the map is not redrawn.
Yes, but probably due to interior drainage, there will still be some smaller areas that are in the floodplain, and we don't want to ignore those. And also, this is, you know, all of these things work together almost simultaneously so that we don't have delays, and we don't want somebody having to delay their development project any more than possible. I mean, this is an uncomfortable, bad situation for a property owner, and I recognize this, and everything we're trying to do is try to facilitate and mediate that situation.
Okay. Slide 66, please. Could you speak more about the stormwater support up to $45 million? What's the source of that?
Stormwater fee. This is an activity that is eligible for stormwater reimbursement, and that will be a decision as we develop the budget. Again, this is much like the water. It would not absolutely require an increase in the fee, but if again, we don't have enough numbers for me to be really sure, but if we did not increase the fee, some of the things we do with stormwater funds right now would fall back into the general fund.
So this is separate from Dallas Water Utility,
yes.
Stormwater?
Yes.
This is just part of the city operating budget?
Yes.
Okay. One final question. Do you have any idea what the difference is between the cost of attaining the 100-year and the 800-year flood protection?
Not at this point in time.
It's 100 to $150 million to get to the 100-year, but
yes.
We don't know what it would take to get to the 800-year.
No, not
point.
Right now. We will, but we don't know right now. And the other thing is that is made a little more complex because some of those solutions probably will be a part of the Trinity River Corridor project.
Okay.
It's very complex after you take care of 100.
All right. Well, I think it's clear that we absolutely, in one way or another, have to move on this as quickly as possible. It's unfortunate that we have to, but it's something that we have to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gaines, please. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mary, thank you for the report. Very good, very detailed. I think you've answered most everything. Oh, I want to ask you about the trees. How many did you say we're cutting?
There's 5,000 trees within 100, within 50 feet of the levee that we're arguing about whether
we know we have to cut that.
No, we're having a discussion.
We don't have to mitigate them, do we?
Probably.
We will?
We don't have to on those? Okay. Excuse me. I'm just assuming you take down a tree, you mitigate.
Well, it's just that much more money. Okay, on 41, you mentioned real quick about the seepage, and you said maybe seepage. We don't know that we've got seepage at all, correct?
All I'm saying is we've done preliminary work that indicates that might be a problem, and it's probably a fairly good indication based on the Corps' new standards.
Yeah.
But what I'm telling you is I can't tell you today exactly how much wall, how long a wall, all that we would do because we need to do more work. We have indications in this area that there may be an issue there, and we need to look further and decide what we do to address it.
Okay. And I think I heard you say if you build next to the levees or are next to the levees, you will have to have flood insurance regardless?
No, what I said was that the recommendation from FEMA and from most folks is if you live behind a levee, you ought to have flood insurance. But that's your choice. But if you were including in these maps that the FEMA draws of the flood area, you are required to have flood insurance if you have a federally backed mortgage or some federal funds in your building.
So I do. I mean, really, if I get flooded, I don't have any insurance. Unless I get flood insurance.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I'm probably going to have flood insurance if I'm next to it. Okay. One more question. You mentioned something. By August 2011, we should have our levees approved?
We need to have the construction complete by then in order to preclude FEMA from remapping the area.
Okay, but I mean, you said we probably would or we should have it done?
We should have the fixes done for the 100-year protection. That's what we're aiming at.
Okay.
And that is a stiff goal.
Ask. I know.
And I'm saying that repeatedly so my partners sitting over there know they got to get up and work as hard as all of us got to go.
If we don't make that date, what happens?
If we didn't make it in time to meet the FEMA remapping, people would be required to buy insurance. I don't want to be there. I don't want to be a part of that.
No.
The Corps doesn't want to be a part of that. HNTB doesn't want to be a part of that. We want to get this done.
Mr. Kane, there's two dates. There's the August of 11, but the other one is this fall, on August of 10, to have the approval to give enough time to go forward with the construction and complete it by August 2011. So we really need to have all the approvals done by October-ish to be able to have enough time to do the construction. So it's the two dates that are correct.
Well, we got that extended time, isn't that correct?
We got the PL 8499 extended on an annual basis, which says that the Corps will help us fix the levees if something happens in the meantime.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mary.
Mr. Tipsy, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Obviously, we need to move ahead and get this going, but I've got a couple of questions. First one, Mary, on the slide that had the walls, the 50-year life, I think is what you mentioned, to the vertical wall.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of strikes me as what's going to happen in 50 years, some future council and some future, I mean,
that's the engineering lifespan, so it could be longer than that. I mean, it's a buried wall of concrete. It's likely to be longer.
That's what was the question. We're going to go build this thing and then, you know, burden some future generation with replacing it. So.
Well, the other solutions were.
Okay, don't go there.
Okay.
You talked about, to follow up on the fill permits. Is the purpose of reducing the fee and getting property owners to move to take advantage of this time period to move their properties out of what would then be the 800 or the 100-year floodplain area? Are those properties today, I mean, do they need to be moved out because they're in the floodplain after we're done doing the work or before we're done doing the work? And the point I'm getting at is we have floodplain permits that go on all the time, because people bought property knowing that part of their property is in the floodplain. And they want to go ahead and use more of it.
Right.
They do a flood permit, and they can't have any effect on the water flow or
right.
volumes, et cetera, et cetera. So how does that interact with what we're trying to do?
We're trying to make this area have less impact on that development as we possibly can. Now, we need to bring, you know, we'll bring a briefing back to you before we bring this to council with more detail on that for you, and I think that's the best answer I should give you right now. And I'll ask Jill to visit with you to be sure we address concerns as we go
okay,
forward.
All right. We'll move on that one. The DWU thing. That's money that's related to DW's management of the storm water.
No.
No?
No. DW is, it's just exactly like, you know, if they had to repair a wall in their facility, if they had to repair a standing wall to support their facility, they have to pay for it, they have to build it, and it's charged to the system. This is their wall that will keep seepage out of their plant. And so
okay,
it's just a capital investment they have to make.
Protection of their facility.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Which brings me to my next question.
Yes, sir.
I think what you're telling us is that we're in an unusual predicament here in that we're the drainage basin for the whole North Texas area. Even the floodwaters that enter the Trinity and Fort Worth end up flowing over here and coming through downtown
yes.
south.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So Fort Worth and Denton and all points
yes.
west and north.
Biggest river basin in the state.
So we're this choke point. And we have to bear the cost for all of their drainage. And we don't have any control over what they're going to do in their cities. It seems to be, I mean, maybe that's where we are, but it seems very inequitable that our taxpayers should pay for fixing the water that is coming from all of these other municipalities.
Well, let Jill say something, then I will.
Yes or no? It's unfair.
No.
That is why we are a member of the common vision.
Well, I'd like to be a member of the common checkbook.
Many years ago, the Council of Governments and the Corps of Engineers rounded up the cities that were along the West Fork and the Elm Fork, and then us, where they come together, in an organization called the Common Vision, and you all to this day every year we pay our money for that. This group of cities then have entered into an agreement with each other to regulate the Trinity floodplain to a standard that is higher than other creeks and rivers in our respective cities. You might remember occasionally you'll see a corridor development certificate process coming through. So we realized, we being this common vision, these 10 cities, that filling in the floodplain, creating additional levees, was going to take up valuable storage areas and was going to affect the flood heights in Dallas because we are the choke point with our given levees. And that's why we self-imposed these regulations upon ourselves. And the cities, if we have an alteration, like when we put in the permits for the new levees that we're building, those cities got the opportunity of reviewing our plans to make sure that we were not causing problems. Likewise, we review fill projects and big levee projects in the upstream cities so that we're all commenting and working together on the issue because it all does come through Dallas.
Okay. Sounds like we've got a common vision to determine that there's a problem, but they just left the checkbook at home when it came time to fix it.
Well, their activities and their development are impacted and restricted and limited by this joint agreement that says we know if upstream people do stuff willy-nilly, it can have an impact on us. So we all got together and agreed to comment and look at those things to minimize that impact.
Right, but at what level? I guess my concern is you know, you go pick any one of the burbs up north, not to you know, paint any one of them as evil, but you know, there's shopping centers, there's development projects. Are you telling me that we as the city of Dallas, as the choke point owner of this, we work with those cities to work on water detention and all sorts of other issues to slow the flow to the Trinity, or at what level do we get involved?
Well, that's a different issue. Now you're talking about small development projects in all of the upstream cities. And for that reason, because there's not a control, the Common Vision does not deal with an area that used to be single farmland and now is going to be a Walmart. And so there is going to be an increase in flow of runoff leaving that property. That's why the computer model that we are using on the Trinity Corridor project is not for existing land use conditions. It's for the conditions in around 2050, 2060. So we've tried to estimate as a region how much additional development is going to occur upstream from us. And as we are doing the Trinity River Corridor project and we're looking at that standard project flood, we're looking at what we're calling a fully developed flow.
That's exactly the problem, yeah. Ms. Jordan, because we're calculating the flow in the river, like you say, in 2050, when everything all the way up to the Red River is going to be developed. And we're saying, great, we'll tax our citizens for fixing the problem right here because all that water is going to be flowing down here.
Well, remember that these 100-year fixes are dealing with existing levels as opposed to what we're trying to achieve on the Trinity project, which is the standard project.
That's fine. It's not a debate. All I'm saying is it sounds like we're paying for everybody's drainage. Is that right?
Well, it all comes through Dallas.
It all comes through Dallas, and then we got to pay to fix it. Okay. Two last things. One, the areas that are going to be impacted by the flood, Mary, do we have any idea as to what it looks like if the levees stayed like they are? Because I'm afraid what the map up there shows is sort of, and I know you said it was worst case scenario, it's as if there was not a levee. But the reality is there is a levee, and it may not meet particularly today's criteria, and we may have some trees and other issues we've got to fix. But the reality is that levee's there. So, not now, but could you come up with a map that's not a map? I noticed you said that this isn't an exact map. As to if we just let things, and I'm not advocating we leave things, but just to give some sense.
Well, I don't think you can do that because if you were doing that, you'd have to assume a situation had occurred. You'd have to say there's seepage here or there's slope failure here, or you'd have to assume a circumstance, which is, of course, is one reason that they assume the worst and draw the biggest. Now, you're absolutely right, and I think that's a point we should all make. Two points in my head, and I'm not the engineer, of course, but one, there are levees there. And if they need work, if we acknowledge they need work, but they're levees and they provide protection. And secondly, some of these things we're protecting for, we have not had a problem with. So.
Well, and my last comment revolves around, you know, all this mapping that's going on, because unfortunately I've got two neighborhoods out in far north Dallas that the homeowners started receiving letters from their mortgage companies in late last year that they now need to go out and buy flood insurance because they had now been designated erroneously to be in a floodplain area. These are areas that have not ever been in a floodplain. Nothing has ever changed, and obviously somebody made a mapping error.
Well,
and it is now taking a long, long time to get what is an admitted mistake on the part of FEMA getting it corrected. And I know it doesn't tie exactly to this, but where I'm tying it to this is, here's something where, you know, mapping is done, and it's like once one of these mistakes takes on a life of its own, it's almost like you can't retract it. So these homeowners are having to buy flood insurance today for an event that is never going to happen and that they're not party to.
Well, in this process, the thing that I would tell you would help, that everybody needs to focus on to not have that situation, is those preliminary revisions are out, and FEMA intends for them to be out for a year before they pronounce them done. So all of us that, you know, are in that area, that everybody that has property in that area needs to look at it exactly the same reason you're talking about. And those comments, as they come in, FEMA checks them all out. So if it takes longer than a year, they take longer than a year. But they've got a year laid out there, and that's one reason we really need to have a really good communication plan about what you need to be doing, your responsibility as a property owner, and the impacts, and what you need to be doing as this process moves forward.
Well, the other thing we need to do is obviously need to move forward and try to get these areas redeveloped and get development, because that's the only way we're going to get the money to come back and be able to recoup the investment that we're going to have to make in the levies by getting additional ad valorem and tax base built up in the areas adjacent to the levies that are being impacted potentially by this. So we need to move on, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hossel.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a quick comment. Mary, thank you again for the presentation. You made it very understandable, again, with the history. I think I'm definitely looking for another simpler way to explain it, especially to my constituents who were part of that group that would be underwater if we did have a flood. On page 66, I think I heard you say that you would give us a list of projects that would need to be stopped so that we could put the money, for instance, the DWU funds, so we could put the money into the 150.
That would be the bond funds, and we will bring that back to you.
Okay,
I can't tell you what, aside from somebody, I can't tell you what they are right now.
Okay.
And again, I would reiterate, that bond program in 06 anticipated some projects that would not be complete.
Okay.
So you would do design on a project, and then you'd do construction in the next bond program.
Right.
So the question is, do we take that design money and apply it to this and get this finished,
right,
and know that we have to
go back,
get more?
And then my only other comment is, are they currently doing some remapping? Is the Corps currently doing remapping?
The Corps doesn't do that. The FEMA does the remapping.
FEMA currently doing remapping?
They're working on it, but they will have preliminary revised maps out sometime this late summer, fall.
Will that affect before August 2010?
No.
It won't affect?
No.
Okay.
You need August 2010, which is this August, those maps are due out, and we all need to be looking at them and commenting on them and questioning and being sure that
that's part of the communication,
right,
that you're going to help us with. And then the last thing is, what percent, just, I don't know if you know this or not, the percentage increase that a homeowner would have to pay if for some reason their home does fall into a map that says they're in the floodplain?
It's so individual for everybody. If they owned their property, they'd have a choice of whether they wanted it for property protection or not. They would not be required to. If they had a federally backed mortgage, uh-huh, they're going to be required to, and it's steep.
Okay.
The percentage increase
would be high.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Hossel. Mary, again, very good job, and I think as indicated by all the comments, all the work is appreciated. Clearly, there's a lot of urgency that goes with this. It's important that we push hard. The urgency isn't just to complete a presentation, but to actually get the work done. As I pointed out earlier, that work's not going to get done unless we get approvals somewhere in that fall time frame in October-ish, because we're just not going to, especially as we get to the winter months, going to be able to accelerate the construction side. And that's what becomes so important working with our partners, and that's why we're appreciative of the Army Corps being here and continuing to work with them. As you pointed out, we're going in lockstep with them. As we get pieces, we're communicating that to them. We're throwing ideas out. Some of those ideas work, some of them don't, but that's an ongoing process, and that's the only way that it'll work. I think as was pointed out, there's little choice. We need to address this. There's an awful lot that's at stake. It's clearly the issues today that are at stake. In a flooding, we run the risk of loss of life, clearly an economic loss with somewhere between $7 and $8 million worth of tax base that wouldn't be in danger at some point. But I think the other thing that we need to ensure is the point that Mr. Tinsky made, is for this project, the overall project needs to go forward. This is a key element of that. Until that overall project goes forward, we're not going to be able to see the economic development, the creation of the tax base that's going to give a return for what we're trying to accomplish on that. Again, I think it's important that we can talk all day long about the standards being different than they were a year ago, all of those different elements, but those are really academic exercises. The standards are what they are. We didn't have a choice in it. We didn't have any control, but we need to be responsive to those standards as they are today, because there's just so much that it's at stake. And as Ms. Margolin pointed out,
This is separate and distinct from anything happening on the Trinity River Corridor project. With it, without it, if we weren't doing another thing in there, we would still have to deal with this. We'd still have to deal with it. The frustrating aspect of it is we have to deal with it before we can get to some of the other components. But to be truthful with you, our citizens ask me all day, and I'm sure that they do every single one of us, when are we going to get on with other pieces of it? All of us want to get on with those pieces. We understand how important they are. The reality of, again, is we didn't control it. Nobody anticipated this, but it is going to make a difference of a couple of years delay. But it's even more important with that to move forward. With that, appreciate all the work, and we'll continue to update the council as we go each of the steps going forward. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. That completes that. Mr. Allen?
Mr. Mayor, during the recent vote on the Reinvestment Zone 16 board chair, I was called out by the city attorney for city business, and I would request able to vote for that.
While I would always be hesitant of granting any type of going back on a vote, because you were pulled out and because we haven't closed the vote, if we had closed the vote, it would be a very different situation now for the results, and clearly because it wasn't your choice. If we run out and it's our own choice, then I don't think we've got any leeway on it. The fact that you were pulled out by the attorneys on a conflict question will come up on a later item, then I will allow you to vote.
Thank you.
With that, let's go ahead and go to the consolidated plan budget.
Good morning. We have a short briefing on the city manager's proposed consolidated plan budget for the upcoming fiscal year 2010-2011.
Gene, if I can interrupt you, I think our goal is let's try to finish this up by the noon hour. Okay. Mr. Atkins will make an announcement of an event that he has at noon where we'll invite all of us.
Okay.
But let's try to get this done by noon.
Okay.
We'll do that. Then we'll do a very short executive session. That will complete our agenda for the day. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
I apologize.
So like I said, we have the city manager's proposed consolidated plan budget for the upcoming 10-11 fiscal year. This budget has been presented to the Community Development Commission, and the commission's recommended amendments are also included in this briefing today. And then the briefing will include any highlights or changes that are included in the proposed budget as compared to the current fiscal year, and then we also will review the next steps in the process. To review, the consolidated plan is four grants that the city receives from HUD on an annual basis. The largest of the four grants is the Community Development Block Grant. We also have Home Investment Partnership, Emergency Shelter Grant, and the Housing Opportunities for People with AIDS. This year, the amount of funds to be received from HUD will be $32.3 million and is a $1.5 million increase compared to the current fiscal year's budget. So to date, the city manager's budget was presented to the Community Development Commission back in early March. The CDC has its own committees. They met many times during the month of March to review the different components of the budget and to make amendments to the manager's budget. Those were approved on April the 1st and are included in today's briefing. So just briefly, the four grants, the first one, the Community Development Block Grant, used to develop viable urban communities. The sources of funds to the budget are, of course, the entitlement, new money from HUD, and then funds that are reallocated from other jurisdictions that don't accept those funds. The city also does get some revenue or program income from a few of the programs that are included in CDBG budget. And then we also have the reprogramming of prior year's unexpended funds, which you looked at earlier this fiscal year. the entitlement will be $19 million, which is an increase of $1.4 million over this current fiscal year. The home grant provides support and produces the supply of affordable and decent housing within the city of Dallas. Again, the sources of funds to this budget are the entitlement, and then also there's some revenue program income generated by some of the programs within the home budget. This entitlement went down ever so slightly over the current year by about $17,000. The emergency shelter grant used to prevent homelessness and assist those who are currently homeless, and simply just an appropriation or an entitlement from HUD, and it's just ever so slight increase there as well of $1,400. And finally, the housing opportunities for persons with AIDS to provide support and services, housing services to those with AIDS, HIV, and their families. And again, this one is simply an appropriation from HUD and an $80,000 increase over the current fiscal year. The chart on slide 10 summarizes the allocations on the entitlement grant for each of the four grants that the city receives in the consolidated plan, so $32.3 million worth of entitlement for the upcoming fiscal year. Additionally, we have the other resources to the grant, the program income, mostly from the CDBG program, and then also SDDC does generate program income as well that they use to make loans. And then also the reprogramming. So grand total, almost $36 million for the consolidated plan budget for the upcoming fiscal year. Then moving on to the uses of the funds or the expenditures, the chart on slide 13 details the various categories of the CDBG budget, and then the other three grants are listed as well. We have both the city manager's recommendations and then what the budget looks like as we've incorporated the amendments from the Community Development Commission. So the total is the same. The allocation between the categories is a little bit different. First, looking at what we considered when developing the budget, of course, we want to maintain our compliance with all of HUD's regulations. We also want to be consistent with the five-year consolidated plan that was adopted 2 years ago. Looking at allocating up to that 15% maximum that we are allowed to allocate funds for public services in the CDBG grant, making sure that we're able to comply with the CDBG's timely expenditure requirements, and then also complying with HUD regulations related to monitoring the contractors and reporting, making sure that we submit all of our reports in a timely manner. First, looking at the public services category, the city manager's recommendation includes reprioritizing funding for the city attorney's office into the two community courts that are currently funded in the recovery, CDBG recovery funds in West Dallas and South Oak Cliff, looking to eliminate the funding for temporary emergency housing funded with CDBG. We do have the HPRP recovery funds available that can serve the same purpose. We also had a one-time amendment in the 09-10 budget that was amended by the CDC. Their direction was that this funding should be available for 1 year only, so that has also been eliminated. Then the next slide shows the recommended amendments from the CDC. There are four public service concepts that they would like to see included in the CDBG budget: a literacy program, an entrepreneurship after-school program for youth, continued funding of the Adults with Disabilities funding. This was currently funded through CDBG recovery funds, and then also Women's Outreach Program. Their offsetting adjustment to keep the budget balanced would be to reduce the NIF infrastructure allocation by that same dollar amount, $87,000. This amendment would bring the public services budget right up to its 15% cap, and the city manager does not object to any of these amendments. In the housing category of the CDBG budget, we would decrease the funding for relocation assistance due to a decreased need for funding in that service at this time. The relocation assistance staff was working on closing out cases from the URSB, and that has all been completed. Since the URSB has been sunset, there really aren't any more additional cases for them to work on, and we do have some unspent funds from prior fiscal years that we can use to supplement the 10-11 budget. Additionally, we are looking to shift some of the funding out of the home budget this year for the mortgage assistance program and increase the CDBG budget. The housing services program has sufficient funds available from prior years and does not need additional funding for the 10-11 fiscal year. There is a small increase in the residential development acquisition loan program. We are realigning some of our staff costs into the administration category, and then all the other programs continue funding from the 9-10 fiscal year. The CDC did not make any amendments to this this category. In the economic development category, we would continue funding the 8 business assistance centers and continue using the SBDC's revolving loan funds. Continue that program. And again, in this category, there were no amendments from the CDC. And in the public improvement category, recommending a slight decrease in the funding for the Neighborhood Street Petition Grant Program, as again, here we have some extra money available from prior fiscal years that can supplement the need for the 10-11 fiscal year. And then about a $1.2 million increase for the Neighborhood Investment Program target areas. This public improvement budget has one amendment from the CDC, and this is just the offset to the amendment that increased the public services budget, so a small decrease in the allocation to the NIP infrastructure projects is recommended by the CDC, and again, the city manager doesn't object to that recommendation as well. The final CDBG category is fair housing and planning and program oversight. This category is capped at 20% of the grant, and we would continue to recommend 20% administrative costs for the upcoming fiscal year. The fair housing program has some funding available from another grant that can be used to supplement some of its activities in the 10-11 fiscal year, and then we would see an increase in contract monitoring in the Housing Community Services Department. As described, we've rearranged some of the staffing in those departments. And finally, we would recommend increasing the funding for the Economic Development Department to be able to comply with all of the reporting requirements related to the BAC program. The CDC did not make any amendments to this category. And then moving on to the home budget for next year, there are two maximum minimums within the home regulations. We're required to allocate at least 15% to development assistance for CHOTOs, and then we cannot allocate any more than 5% to CHOTO operating assistance. The funding for CHOTO development loans recommended at $2.7 million, which is above the minimum of about $1.3 million, although it is a little bit less than the current fiscal year. And then as we've increased the funding for the mortgage assistance program in CDBG, we would just reduce the funding in the home grant for that program for 10-11, but we do have funds available from prior years to help supplement the 10-11 fiscal year. We continue the funding for the Reconstruction Share program, and then are recommending a new program that would provide loans and grants for private and nonprofit organizations so that they can develop permanent supportive housing and housing for senior citizens based on interest expressed by the housing committee. Additionally, continue funding for the tenant-based rental assistance that's included in the home grant, The CDC did not make any amendments to the home budget. ESG is one of the smaller grants in the consolidated plan. Recommend increasing funds for the operation of the bridge by about $157,000. And then, again, here we would recommend using homelessness prevention, rapid rehousing, recovery funds to provide prevention services for the upcoming year. And the CDC did not make any amendments to the ESG budget. And then finally, the Hopwood grant, the funding allocations that are made are done with consideration to those priorities that were set by the Ryan White Planning Council and in its needs assessment. We have combined the two line items for tenant-based rental assistance and emergency assistance into just a single program for next year to give us a little flexibility to move between the two programs. The manager recommended a decrease in the housing facilities rehab and repair category and increase funding for housing facilities operations and then continue the funding for all of the programs that were funded in the 9-10 fiscal year. The CDC did have an amendment to this, the HOPA budget, to add $7,000 for facilities rehab and repair and offset it with a reduction in housing facilities operations so that some repairs could be made at some of the HOPA facilities, which the city manager does not object to. So the next steps in this process would be that the city manager would ask that any amendments that council members would like to be submitted would be provided to her by April the 28th, and then these amendments could be discussed at the May 5th city council meeting, and informal straw votes could be taken at that time. On May the 12th, the council agenda would include an item that would include the preliminary adoption of the consolidated plan budget, and that preliminary adoption starts the clock ticking on a required 30-day public or review and comment period that we have to have according to HUD. And June 9th, we would have the public hearing on the consolidated plan. June 23rd would be the final adoption by the City Council of that budget. Then we would submit our action plan, which is the budget document for the consolidated plan, to HUD on August the 13th. And then the funds would be available for the city to begin spending on October the 1st. There is an attachment to the briefing that has all of the projects and concepts that would be funded. They're listed by the grant that they're included in and are totaled at the bottom. So that concludes the presentation, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I want to thank the manager and our CDC commission for working so diligently. I think what you might have seen in this briefing is that in some areas you've seen in there that money was being taken out, but it was actually put in from another source of funding, and I think that's very important. Many groups and communities have gotten together in this last year and working with the commission to make sure that we can address issues affecting, you know, not only homeless but also our seniors. And senior funding is in this consolidated plan budget recommendation, so I'm very happy to see that. Our small businesses are also included, which is something that we feel very strongly. As they say, the largest employer of any city is actually the smaller businesses, and I think it's important that we keep a focus on them. As we hear the large companies that are doing layoffs, it's very rare that you'll hear about a lot of smaller companies doing layoffs because they are able to more adapt to the changing circumstances, so I'm happy that we are addressing that. The only one thing that I'll add right now, because I think as this is moving forward, that we have asked to look at our policies in housing. One specific one that could affect the plan budget would be the bricks and mortar policy that was adopted several years ago, but that might be something that might not be applicable to this budget, but certainly as we go forward in the future, using CDBG, for example, to assist
YMCAs, to assist West Dallas Community Centers, to assist different other nonprofit agencies to help with some of their infrastructure. As in the case of parks, for example, we're not able to do, as in the past, help with rec centers in private facilities, but if we change the policy, that could be something in the future that we could look at. So, Mayor, thank you very much for allowing me to speak first. And Mary, I want to thank you and your staff for working with CDC. Like I said, even where there were differences, the differences were actually made up in other areas, which I think helped to balance it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to kind of piggyback on what my colleague said, Steve Seligar, has said. We pulled together a brick and mortar committee, and I was the chair of that committee. In that, and you're supposed to get back with us to update us. Now, we made some major changes, so it's just, it would not be like the old one was. We asked that we look at organizations that's 5 years in the making, who have been in the nonprofit 5 years or more. We looked at perhaps a one-time application fee, one-time application process for a nonprofit organization, and we list a number of things. Do you have those items?
I don't have them in front of me, but what I recall is that we also looked at setting a limit on the annual amount that could be allocated for those type of projects, and also looking at the number of agencies who could receive funding, and also whether or not we would place a lien on the property to make sure that we
since
get our money
would be
back.
The first, you know, lien holder, perhaps looking at us placing a lien on the property until the money is paid back. So, Steve, when would that information come to our next meeting?
Well, we're anticipating that the next planning, the first planning committee in May will be discussing the policies. It's just not that one policy, several policies we'll discuss. And then that could be council action by June, I would hope.
Okay, then. Mary, this is really good, and I want to personally thank you for that. And we got an increase in CDBG funding, and I'm very, very excited about that, because when we went to Washington, we lobbied, all the council members lobbied, more funding for CDBG funding, and I'm very, very excited to see that they gave us more money. This is the first time in a long time that we've seen this type of increase. I want to talk about the stimulus money. There was some stimulus money for some of our centers like West Dallas and the Martin Luther King Center to do certain things. When would that start? Okay, then. Yeah, the work on the building. Okay. The senior program, how is that going from our last year's budget? How is the senior program going with in partnership with the county?
Our partnerships with the county are going well. There have been no blips that I know of, so there may have been minor ones, but nothing that's...
And this includes the senior program over at the Martin Luther King Center?
As far as I know, and I'll say that and somebody will straighten me out, but I have not heard of any concerns.
Oh, okay, okay.
The level of service on this is less than it was, clearly, but...
Okay. But as time goes by, then we can perhaps look at, you know, adding some more things as we get through this budget crisis. On the NIP areas, CDBG funding has really helped that Bear Street area, and it looks extremely, extremely good down in that area. We still have some hiccups in the area, but what has been done so far on Bear Street is working. We have a couple more buildings that they're going to start new construction on. I think the police substation is going to start its construction, and all of this was done with CDBG funding. We took a small area through the NIP NIP area, and we made it a success story. So I'm really excited about CDBG funding working in that area. It can work. On page 22, Now, on the NIP infrastructure, Mary, is that just a small, why was there a decrease on in that?
The budget itself goes up from the current fiscal year. The CDC, when they made their amendment to the public services budget, recommended that the funding be reduced from the NIP allocation, but it is a pretty substantial increase from the prior year.
Okay, but we would not lose anything by doing that, will we? Okay. So I see there's a footnote down there that you'll still find the money from other place. Okay, to continue. Because the infrastructure, I think, is really important as we're doing work in those NIP areas. And then on page 30. You talked a little about, Mary, decrease funding in the housing facility for rehab, repair. Is because we have some money already there for previous CDBG funding, and so it's enough to kind of do what we need through the whole entire city. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. McGraw, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And I want to thank our community development commission for coming. I know my appointee and the vice chair is here, Mike. I want to thank you for all commission's hard work. I know that y'all met through March to do this, and I don't know if you want to just take a minute to tell the council members how hard it was, because I mean I think every year it's harder and harder.
I am Mike Lavallo, the vice chair of the Community Development Commission, serving my third term. It was a tough year because of lots of new members to city council, naturally meant lots of new appointees to our board. Getting folks to understand that we're not necessarily supporting certain charities, but we are supporting their concepts and programs that we'd like throughout the city. Mary, thank you. Your budget really helped us this year. The additional money from Washington made a big difference, but most importantly, our chief person, Pat Harrington, retired after 37 years, and she was our lifeline. And she's left behind an extremely competent group of folks that got us through the past 2 months since she left, staff, that we'd like to, the rest of the group has asked me to thank. So I'm now here in case anybody had any questions. But thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Ms. Margolin, please.
Thank you. A number of specific questions. Could we go to slide 14? I was not aware that there is such a thing as a five-year consolidated plan, and so I would like to get a copy of that. I assume that is redone every 5 years, or is it a rolling five-year plan, or what is it?
It's redone every 5 years, and it just sets out your goals for the upcoming 5 years, and then we make sure that each annual plan is consistent with our five-year plan. But I can definitely get you a copy.
So are the goals things that we're hoping to accomplish with this money, or how we're just intending to spend the money?
I'm looking.
If you don't know, that's fine.
I'm going to ask Shan Williams, who's our expert, to explain how this works.
The five-year plan is a strategic plan that sets out the goals and objectives of what we want to see happen in the city with consolidated plans, with the consolidated funds. What we want to do, it has our needs assessments, various housing assessments, various
data. So it's a way of attaining certain goals.
Yes, and it sets out what the goal and the plan is.
Okay, thanks. All right, on slide 16, there are three new concepts, and I guess what I'm wondering is, were these put in here with certain programs in mind? Because that's sort of how it struck me when I read it, that somebody had something in mind that they want to fund for $18,000, $12,000, $6,000, $30,000, and so these are in here as concepts with the goal of funding specific programs. Is that accurate?
What happens is for various nonprofits will bring forward a program that they would like to, that ultimately they would like to be awarded the funding for it. What what we have to put in our budget is simply the concept. So the literacy program in concept is a way for parents to be able to help their preschool age children learn to read.
Right.
So the city will put a proposal out and ask for responses back to that proposal to provide that service.
So we don't know at this point who might be receiving that?
Not at this point, no.
Okay. What is Women's Outreach Program? What does that mean?
It is a program that Homeward Bound is the nonprofit that brought this concept forward, but it's an outreach program to assist women at the truck stops at the I-20 and Bonneview area.
So this is likely designated for them? I mean, unless somebody else can also do it?
Yeah, there may be other organizations out there that when they see the proposal, they think that they can also provide that service,
okay.
And everybody is welcome to submit a proposal.
Okay. On slide 20, the 8 current business assistance centers, those are funded at, is it $80,000 each? So that's $640,000. Do we, what are we getting for that? Do we get reports? Do we know? Because that's a lot of money. So I'm just curious to know how we know what the city is getting for that money.
We receive monthly reports on various metrics for the amount of services that they're providing, the kind of jobs that they are producing, and are required to report on a monthly basis.
Okay, so we're getting what the number of contacts with clients, what the nature of those are. Do we feel pretty confident that they are? Because this strikes me as a lot of money, and I just want to make sure that we're getting a lot of benefit for the money that we're spending.
Yes.
Okay. On slide 48, it says Neighborhood Street Petition Grant Program, and I just wanted to know what that was.
Are you familiar with the petition paving program?
When we do an split 50-50.
Right.
That's what that is?
Right. When we send out the bills for the assessments, included in there is an application where any property owner who meets the low-mod income criteria can apply for CDBG funds to pay their portion of the assessment.
Okay. Slide 24, what is the BAC program? What is BAC?
The Business Assistance Center.
The what? Oh, that's Business Assistance Center. Okay. And slide 27, it says that the manager's recommendation is new funding for housing development loan program, but there was no dollar amount, and so I wondered, what are we putting in there?
It is $2 million.
And where is that coming from?
That will be from the home grant allocation.
Okay, so it's a shift from one program within home to another? Is that what it
yes,
is?
That's what we're doing with the home funds for the current, for the upcoming
okay.
year.
Okay, and then on the next slide, 28, and this is a general question, but it applies to the bridge. Are we allocating all the money possible for the bridge out of these funds that we can, or have we kind of capped it at some point? Is there more that we could really be using from these funds for the bridge?
I'm looking for the housing department to help.
Councilmember Margolin, we, Charles Bordeaux, Assistant Director of Housing Community Services, we have looked at the budget and looked at the funds available and have made the shift to get these $378,000, and we are really maximizing
that's
what
my
we
question.
Can to put into the
okay,
budget.
Good. That's my question. And then similarly, is there any place that the city is not taking the maximum reimbursement to which it's entitled to offset our administrative costs? Or are we everywhere?
We're at the maximum.
We are at the maximum.
Cost, yes.
Good. One thing I want to be clear about to particularly my constituents or anyone who might be interested, that this is all money that comes to us from the federal government, I think from HUD, all from Housing and Urban Development.
to be used for a variety of programs in our community, that this is not from local taxes or our general fund. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess line 15, it's on page 39. Just one question. And it's about the reentry program, the $92,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is that been shifted? What is that $92,000 going to go in the budget 2010 and 2011? It's on page 39,
right.
I believe.
At this point, we are still looking for funding for that program.
Okay, but the $92,000, is that going to be shipped into another line item?
It's not shifted into another line item within the CDBG budget. There'd be the potential to fund it from another grant or the general fund.
Okay.
That would be the other options we had on that line.
Okay, on April 28th, is that the time that we need to submit and see how we balance that out?
Right. Any amendments that you would like to see would need to be submitted by then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Basile, of course, thank you for your presentation. Always good to have staff know that they've done a good job. However, my comment is actually to the council, my colleagues, and this has been mentioned at least two times. We have seen an increase in funding from the federal government. That is due in large part because on the Hill, colleagues, we have such an excellent reputation for the manner in which we present, for being unified, and for knowing what we're talking about. I want to thank each and every one of you, Ms. Hume, the lobbyist in Washington, our staff in Dallas, Brett Wilkinson, and Anna Holmes and staff, and each one of you who went to each of the congressional offices, for the way you handled yourself. We had a program. Each of you had a specific part, and each of you adhered to that and was kind enough to allow me to assist you in getting your part said. That kind of unity pays off on the Hill. Thank you for your cooperation, for your support. Keep it up. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Allen, finally.
Councilwoman Hill, very good comments, because it is all about unity. It is all about unity and being one voice as we go through. With that being said, I want to say thanks, Michael, for you and what you do and your commission and what they do. A lot of hard work, a lot of hard decisions that you and your commissions have to make. A lot of time, energy, and effort goes into it. As we go forward, I have a new member that's going to be coming on, Tim James. And so put him under your wing. There's poor people all over this great city, and they live in all parts of the city. So, continue your hard work, continue trying to better the quality of life of all people throughout all the city. Appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Appreciate you. Thank you very much. Let's try to wrap up a couple of things. There's going to be two announcements. I'm going to turn to Ms. Coop in just a moment, and then Mr. Atkins, if you'll make the announcement leading into the afternoon. Item number two that we dealt with earlier, there was one question as we were voting in regard to relative qualification. It was pointed out that we're talking two different things. There's a set of qualifications that deal with the TIF boards, and there's another set of qualifications that deal with boards and commissions. So that clarified that. I'll take that vote then, and given that we voted, we'll go ahead, and the ayes had it, so it'll be so ordered. In regard to the second one, which was the ballot, that came out 7-7. We will go ahead and put it on the agenda for next week, and we will vote again. The third item then, Mr. Natinsky, if I can turn to you for a quick motion, please.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. It'll be quick. On item three, I make a motion.
So did you read that into the record?
Thank you. Item number three is to authorize, number one, the appointment of 18 underwriting syndicate members for future negotiated bond financings, J.P. Morgan Securities, Inc. and Company, Bank of America Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, Southwest Securities, Inc., RBC Capital Markets Corporation, Raymond James & Associates, Inc., Siebert Bradford Schenck & Company, LLC, M.R. Beal & Company, Cabrera Capital Markets, LLC, Citigroup Global Markets, Inc., Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., Goldman Sachs & Company, Morgan Keegan & Company, Inc., Piper Jeffries Stifel Nicholas & Company, Incorporated, Loop Capital Markets, LLC, Samuel A. Ramirez & Company, and Jackson Securities, LLC. And number two, the appointment of six alternate underwriting syndicate members for future negotiated bond financing, Barclays Capital, Inc., Stevens, Inc., Duncan Williams, Inc., Jeffries & Company, Inc., BB&T Capital Markets, and Stern Brothers & Company, most advantageous proposers of 37.
Mr. Tiff. Okay, now, Mr. Mayor, I make a motion to approve Agenda Item 3 with the following change to Section 2, deleting BB&T Capital Markets and replacing it with Frost Bank.
Okay.
It's been moved and seconded.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, if I may please, is there any of the council members present that may possibly have a financial, either direct or indirect, with Frost Bank?
We had one conflict of interest in an earlier issue, and I would point out that Mr. Allen declared that, and he's excused himself from the room.
Any
given the new motion
in
Frost, which is Secretary's
during report. The briefing, I believed that I had a conflict, and so I left, but it turned out when I looked at it later that I do not have a conflict.
So given the substitution, if there's no conflict of interest with Frost Bank, and Ms. Hosso has a conflict of interest or potential conflict, so she'll excuse herself from the chamber. As soon as she does, then we've got a motion and second. We'll vote on that.
Got to be on the ball there.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Ms. Coop, I think we got a special announcement.
Yes, we do have a special announcement.
Big cheer.
One of our members here has been accepted to the UT Law School Fellows Program for Center for Public Policy Dispute and Resolution. She'll go through training with other colleagues, including some state reps and the such, and it's Ms. Medrano, and we're very proud of her that she'll be a UT Fellow. So does that make you guys, you, Judge Hill, and because you graduated from UT Law School, does that make you some kind of, oh, there you go, okay, so, you know, this kind of thing. But I think, colleagues, I went through this program several years ago. I did nominate Ms. Medrano. I think it's important insofar that you need a couple of the state reps, but also you get a good idea around the state, like TCEQ is represented there, Texas Parks and Wildlife, and you go through 3 or 4 days of training with folks that have different disciplines around the state, and I think that makes for a more well-rounded council member. And although she doesn't need to know anything about hospital disputes at all, I mean, you know, or conflict resolution, because she's an expert at that, I think the relationships that you develop there are important, and so I think that's why, you know, it'd be important to continue trying to have a member represented. So congratulations, Ms. Medrano. Very proud of you.
Ms. Coop, thank you very much, and Mayor, just want to let you know that there are definitely going to be a couple of state senators, and Ms. Hill will be a couple of state reps down there, and also we will have the senator from Nebraska, Senator Landis, that will be giving us some coaching, and I'm thrilled and excited, and I want to thank Ms. Coop for nominating me.
Terrific. Congratulations on the selection from all of us. Appreciate that. Mr. Atkins.
Okay.
Special event, special announcement.
Special announcement. On May 3rd, we have our second annual Paul Quinn Night of Classes. Will be May 3rd at Paul Quinn College. Today at 12 o'clock, we're going to have Regina Taylor, an actress, a playwright, and director. She will be up there at 12 o'clock in the flag room doing autographs, so you're all invited. And that's it, man.
Terrific. We appreciate it. We'll run to that. What we'll do is go ahead and we'll take about half an hour on that. Why don't we come back at 12:45 into executive session over lunch? There are two cases. They'll be relatively brief. We'll deal with those. We've completed the agenda, then we'll come back in for any of the afternoon speakers if there are. We'll go into the lunch.
The lunch.
The lunch room.
Okay.
Now being 12:05 on April 21st of 2010, the City Council will now go into a closed session under Section 551.071 of the Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the attorney on the following matters: Kelly versus Dallas, Brown versus Dallas, and Martinez. So I anticipate that we'll probably be back here in the area of 1 to 1:15. We're in recess.
We're going to start first.
We don't need one for speakers.
Zales, followed by William Hopkins. I'll first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council, or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred for further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Again, your first speaker is Randy Gonzalez, not present. William Hopkins, not present. Ozumba Lunks, not present. Tamara Washington, you'll have 2 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both screens. When the number turns to zero, please stop speaking, and you may address your comments to the chair, Mayor Leppard. Thank you. Please state your name and address for the record.
Can my minute start over? My name is Tamara Washington. I live at 2814 Painted Trail, Dallas, Texas, 75237. And today, I just want to just briefly talk about, I was looking on the Dallas City of Dallas website, and there's foreclosure listings. And for January 2008 through September 2008, and I'll just use, I live in District 8, so I'll give an example of my district. There were 404 foreclosures for that 6 month, let's say January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, for that time frame. So basically, 404 foreclosures for that month divided, oh my goodness, I need my calculator, I apologize. Basically, I don't have my calculator out with me. Anyway, 404 foreclosures, and I'll let you do the math on how many people per day that is that were needing foreclosure, you know, that needed relocation assistance, and just using that figure and saying that there are about three people per household. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about. And then also, I don't know if there are any, like for the, any changes coming up for the summer with the, for example, the Dallas Library. Those hours were changed, and so I don't know if, like, with the sprinkler parks that are going to be coming open this summer, for example, if the city is going to be closing those, my recommendation is if they're going to be closed for certain time frames, for example, maybe Tuesdays and Wednesdays, they would be open if that could be on a rotating basis. For example, maybe Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 1 week, and then Tuesday and Thursday another week, in case someone has a work schedule and they can't ever get there if the city would decide to close the park, just decide to close the sprinkler parks on certain specific days all throughout the summer, if they would be on a rotating basis. And so basically, do I have extra time, Mr. Leppard? Because my
10 seconds
into it. So basically, I'll just 404 times 8. I'll just do an average. 400 times 8 is 3,200 people, and 3,200 people
times three. I'll just say 3,000 people times three is 900 people. So that's around 900 people needing relocation, other housing during that time frame. Just an average between January of 2008 and September of 2008. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Leslie Davis.
God bless you. I mean, y'all have a, hope you have a nice time in Georgia Press Club with Miss Regina Taylor. And a little bite to eat, too. And we got 3 minutes today? Okay, that's good. We'll see. We should all think about Israel and their struggle to survive this world. With so many, I ain't gonna say the name, but foreign countries trying to attack them and take over their little small country. We should do all we can to help Israel. And all you kids at home, take your brother or your grandmother by the side. Say, we the can-do people. We can do things that are great and spectacular. We trust in the Lord. And it's one scripture I always remember. Y'all come out of God, you know what I'm saying, all this. Y'all come out of God. One scripture says, love the Lord thy God with all the heart, soul, and mind, and strength. And love your neighbor, love yourself. On these two scriptures, it contains the whole Bible. You can just trust the Lord with all your heart and love the Lord with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And, that's another one called that next, but just trust the Lord, love the Lord and learn how to love the Lord. So it's more than words. You got to meditate on it day and night and keep thinking about it and how you can serve mankind and help mankind do great things. And I hope this city can stay in the States, but like I said, full term, I want everybody to stay full term, especially the man. We make the man so much, but he's my man. I mean, you know, we go right and left. I mean, you know, one foot after the other. And let's see. To the kiddos too, when you take a test, do your best on your test. Don't worry about the grade. Just do your best. And know you gave your best. Lord look to you to give your best on the test. And when you're at home with your sister and brother, even if he is on crack cocaine, try to love him still. And even if she's suicidal, even if they don't beat you and misuse you, you still try to love them. Keep loving. Always love. Love is the key. Love is the most powerful thing in the universe. If you can keep that in your mind, and keep trying. I don't care what somebody say, you're not trying. If you know in your mind that you think that you're trying, and they say you're not good enough, try to do better next time, or say, I try to give my best this time. And then keep trying to give your best, and see what else. I got 55 seconds. I got it just in time. We are going to the moon. We are going back to the moon. But we need to go with China as an escort, because they might have the technology and know-how that we have in the United States, because we're the can-do people. Spill out of Houston, you know, and with Tom Landry Cowboys, you know, we can do it. Okay, I got there, and I'll let you go, because it's a wrap. God bless you.
Conclusive speakers.
It's a wrap.
Meeting adjourned at 1:29.